we
have. We're recording.
Okay. Good morning, one and all. I want to welcome you to the regular meeting of the Napomo Community Services District, April 27th, 2005. We are celebrating our 40th year. And with that, I would like all to rise and join me in the flag salute. Begin.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
And I thank you. Madam Secretary, would you please call the roll?
Director Wersing?
Here.
Director Trotter? Director Wynn?
Here.
Director Eby?
Here.
President Hermanos?
Here. This time, there's a public comment period that for the public to give comments on any item within the jurisdiction of the district, but not on today's agenda. Presentations should be limited to 3 minutes. Is there any public comment?
Homer Fox lives in a district. Is supplemental water on the agenda today?
Not specifically.
As part of the capacity charges, the answer.
I mean, would it be appropriate to ask a question about supplemental water? Is this time or should I wait later?
As long as it doesn't relate to capacity charges.
No, my question is, I read in the newspaper that the mix of the water coming from Santa Maria would be 56-44. So I assume 44 would be from the groundwater percentage.
Mr. LeBrun, you may want to
clarify. If I may, the mix that the newspaper's talking about is what we envision as our blend of Santa Maria water and our native groundwater. The city of Santa Maria, they provide a mix, of course, of state water and groundwater in a different version of groundwater called Twitchell water. And that blend, it'll depend on time of year and how much their overall supply demand is. But that's not 56-44.
Okay, because if it was, I was wondering why the district would pay so much water money for 50% native water.
Right.
If that figure's correct.
Well, and one good reason is we can't access that water in the Santa Maria, in the greater Santa Maria groundwater basin. But our blend from Santa Maria will be the same as their customers receive. And that will depend, again, on their supply constraints. We can envision a time in the future, maybe, where there's a statewide drought, a major drought, where state water is not being delivered in the pipeline. And what we receive from Santa Maria at that time could be 100% Santa Maria groundwater and / Twitchell water, which is another groundwater source.
If that's the case, would that still be considered supplemental water if it was 100% groundwater?
It's supplemental. When we discuss supplemental here at the district, it is relative to the Napomo Mesa sub-area. And again, the district's right to pump that water in a drought situation might be limited to none. So it's important for us to have that link to Santa Maria because we have somewhat of a guarantee then.
Okay, thanks a lot.
You're very welcome. Any other public comment on items within our jurisdiction but not on today's agenda? Seeing none, then we'll bring it back to the board and go to the consent agenda. D1 warrants. Do we want to do these one at a time or just lump it?
I'm ready to lump it.
I'm ready to lump it.
Have any questions?
Are there any comments or questions on the warrants? Any comments, corrections, questions on the minutes? I do have one. On the minutes, page 6. Under item H, director's comments, the bottom, President Verheilig, the second line on May 24th, San Luis Obispo, Board of Supervisors, that should probably be Board of Supervisors, although that may be fitting sometimes too. That was the only correction I had to the minutes.
I had an additional comment on that same page, just to say that in addition to saying that there's $2.5 million in Prop 15, that's 50.
That's right.
And my comment was to the point that we need to look seriously about administrative additions to the district staff, if such monies are something we really want to pursue.
Okay. Any other comments or corrections to the minutes? Any on the third quarter financial statements and certificates of participation report? D4, the investment policy, or D5, the resolution initiating proceedings for the annual levy on our landscape district.
On D4, I would only comment, as I would on D3, the staff's to be commended for the excellent work they've done here.
Hear, hear. We're getting a little higher interest rate.
It's creeping up.
It's creeping. Like a snail uphill. So with that, we need a motion to accept the consent agenda as corrected.
So moved.
Thank you, Mr. Nguyen. We need a second.
I'll second that.
Thank you, Mrs. Wersing. And we'll now open it to public comment. Any comments on the consent agenda?
Homer Fox from the district. I read the report and was 0.01%. Is that a typo for interest received? I think I said saw 0.01%.
0.1.
Yes, yeah, 0.1 on the money market.
Oh,
0.1%.
Tenth of a percent.
Oh. Yeah. Not stellar. But it's higher than last year at this time when it was only 0.05%. Okay. any further public comment? Then seeing none, we'll bring it back to the board. And Madam Secretary, could you please call for the vote?
Director Wersing?
Yes.
Director Nguyen?
Yes.
Director Eby?
Yes.
Director Brown?
Yes. Moving on to administrative items, Mr. Cleef is with us at this time and would like to move item E8 to the top of the list. That's acceptable to the board.
Yes.
Everybody happy with that? We'll have a report on our Hermerick well. And Mr. LeBrun.
Just a brief introduction before we have Tim Cleef come to the podium. This is to give the board and the public an update on our Hermerick Well project. As the board will recall, we've expended significant amount of funds over the past 6 months in drilling a deep well, exploration well, if you will, in an attempt to obtain, again, what would be a supplemental water source, supplemental to the Napomo Mesa hydrologic subarea. Subbasin. It appears that to a great degree that well has been somewhat unsuccessful. I have met with the consulting engineer Jim Gehring and Mr. Cleef on this earlier this week. And in addition, our utility supervisor attended that meeting. We discussed a number of options. And I believe we have a path forward for taking a look at the well, basically doing some further review of the data log and taking a look at maybe sealing a portion of the well casing and attempting to further develop the upper. We have two screen zones in that well, and we're going to take a good hard look at whether further development of the upper zone might produce more water and a better quality water. Again, right now we have two zones that are screened. And so we've got a path forward for that, but certainly our expectations are down a bit from where they were when we started this project, I think. But with that, I'll have Tim step up and provide some more detail, and then we'll open it up and staff and Mr. Pleak will do our best to answer any questions the board or the public might have on this.
Okay. Mr. Pleak.
Thank you. Good morning, board members and staff. Tim Cleet, Cleet & Associates, San Luis Obispo, working with the district on the Hermick Well number 2. As Michael had discussed with you, the quality of the water and the production from the exploratory well was not what we would have liked at this point in time. Once the development of the well has not been fully accomplished, because when we found out the quality was poor, we said, well, let's stop it right now. And Michael asked me to reevaluate what can we do with what we have, or what's the next step. And it's clear that we have to, if this well is going to have any value to the district, it has to have a significantly better quality, and it has to produce more water. And as Michael mentioned also, there's two main zones. One's at 1,480 to 1,520 feet. It's very deep. And then the other one is from 770 to 1,250, which is pretty deep too. We have had significant discussions about whether we should go for the shallower aquifers, and the desire was to not compete with an adjacent farmer in terms of pumping from the zone which the Hermick Well number 1 actually did pump from, which was around 400 feet depth. So that's been totally sealed off down to 700 feet. There is no influence from this well on the adjacent well, and that's established. However, as you go deeper, you don't really know what you're going to get, because nobody else has gone that deep before. And so we did identify that there were several different strata that we wanted to give a good look at, and we wanted to go for the maximum amount of footage of a fractured rock zone that we could. The deepest zone, there was just a small zone, and then there's nothing moving up the hole until you get to about 1,250 feet. So that's why we designed the well that we did. At this point in time, we found that the water is warm, it has very high sulfur content, and it has high salinity, and to a point where you really cannot just treat the water and say it's good for potable consumption. The sulfur content is at a level where it actually can be somewhat hazardous. And so we don't know exactly where this quality of water is coming from, whether it's the upper zones and which of the strata up there, or this one deeper zone, but it's my opinion that the deeper zone is contributing significantly to the poor quality of the water being produced. The water's warm, and when we did our temperature log on the hole, it looked warmer down at the greater depth. That generally, you get a degree per 100 feet in a rock zone. So we were at, the temperature of the water was around 90 degrees. If we can seal off that lower zone, shallower zones should be cooler, but in terms of mineral content, we don't really know. So, what do we do from here? I mean, the well was pumped at about 75 to 100 gallons per minute. That's not acceptable for a domestic water supply. So the question is, have we really fully developed the well, And what can we do to get rid of the bad water? Well, as we've discussed, the one thing we can do is to, just to, as we review where we're at, is to take another look at the, since we know the chemistry of the water at the moment, we can look at our electric log and kind of make some correlations of the signature of the electrical log with the quality that we're getting and the quality we know that's present in the 400-foot zone, which is also revealed on the electric log. So there's some comparison things we can do. And so one of the things we said is we can get somebody, but it'll take somebody who's a, more of an expert on these geophysical logs. I mean, I've worked with them for 20 years. I know what they mean, but when you start getting into different types of chemistry, the electric log signatures change. If you have calcium sulfate minerals in the ground, it can change how the electrical signatures that are being read on these geophysical logs display themselves. So one of the things would be to find somebody who is an expert in looking at these to see, okay, based on what we know, where is that quality problem coming from? And then second of all, we would want to go in. This is kind of what I'm thinking in terms of what would be appropriate is just to seal off that bottom zone. Because I really believe that that's where some of the saltier water is coming from. If the geophysical log expert says no, well then we may want to pack or test individual fractured rock zones. But again, the question is, are we going to get enough water out of this too? And so just if we follow through where I would think we ought to go, we ought to think about sealing off the bottom zone and sampling the upper zone and also further developing the upper zone. And there's various methods we can do to improve the development. Well, by development, I mean that when you're drilling the well, you are using a drilling fluid to coat the walls, and there's mud in the hole, which you have to get out before the water can come in. And so what we want to do is do some alternative development methods to clean out that mud so that we can get a good sample, and it also will increase the productivity of those zones. So summarizing, and then what we would do is then we'd pump it and see what the yield would be and what the quality would be. But since quality is so important, what we want to do is first look at the quality, sample the upper zone as quickly as we can so that we don't spend any additional effort on something which we think, well, we're only going to get water quality that's not acceptable anyways. So that's kind of the way I'd lay it out for you. I don't know, is there anything else you would like me to discuss, Michael?
No, I think that's we'll clear on that, and we'll be able to tell them the questions from the board or the audience.
Okay.
Yeah, any questions, comments of Mr. Cleef?
I do. Board?
Michael? Or Mike?
Tim, I appreciate the complete report you made very much. I noticed that you said in your presentation that you'd clearly shown that there was no impact on nearby wells, which was important to us.
Right.
Going in. So
yes, it is.
That's good. But since these strata are slanted, say we had decent water in that upper zone, how would we feel confident that we were not actually drawing down water that was in shallower wells that weren't immediately nearby but were further upslope?
You know, you got to hope that the water is going to come in somewhere because we don't have an unlimited supply of water underground. So yes, it does come up. The beds are generally dipping towards Thompson Road. And so that if you, I don't know of any wells that are present towards Thompson Road. Actually, it'd be kind of in the area near Thompson Road, immediately adjacent to it, within you know, probably 1,000 feet. I'm not aware of any other wells.
So it dips up toward Thompson?
Yes.
That way?
Yes, it is. We haven't done a, we haven't had a chance, well, I shouldn't say this. Where the strata go has not been completely studied because it's pretty complex out there in terms of how the rocks are folded around and what particular strata are coming out in the surface. But that's a good thing to do. At this point in time, we have the well, so we have to figure out what we want to do with the well. Where it's going to, what wells it'll influence, I don't think at this point it'll have any effect on any well. The ag wells are more parallel to Thompson, and so the bed, since the beds are dipping from Thompson towards the well, ag wells would be expected to hit the zones at about the same depth. That's why the old Hermit well had the same effect on the adjacent ag well, probably, because they're producing from the same zones. So if I went parallel to Thompson Road, I'd probably hit the same thing in other holes as we hit here, because they're along what we call the strike of the bed.
Thank you.
Sure. Mrs. Worsing?
Yes. What is your projected cost to...
I certainly think that's an important question. I've been talking to the driller we met yesterday to discuss these things, and he wasn't able to come through with a number for me in terms of what the development costs would be. I don't know. It's really right to throw out a number without more substantive foundations for it, but. Relative to the cost of the well, it's going to be a small fraction of that, but it won't be a insignificant cost. It won't be a $1,000 cost. We're probably talking in the range of $20,000 to $40,000. That's just my gut feel. You know, I can't really give you a quote on that, but it depends on exactly what we end up doing. You know. You know, each component has a cost to it. Reviewing the electric log is probably, you know, not more than $1,500 probably. But to go in and seal off the bottom zones, that could be a few thousand dollars. And then to go in and redevelop it, you know, you're talking about $200 an hour or so, you know, and it may take 40 hours to 60 hours. And then you put a pump in and it costs... Anyways, you start adding those things up, it gets to be an additional cost. That's not something you would just ignore. We want to evaluate that. Sure.
Mr. Eby.
I got a couple of questions. The first one is, do you think this would be indicative of any well that deep in the Pomo Valley, or is this just a shot in the dark and you'd have to have the same probability of any other well?
There have been many other wells that have hit poor quality that were not acceptable. And the deeper you go, the less that you can think of water recharging it has an effect. It's just sitting down there for a long time. So deep wells, I mean, we don't have any other deep wells to evaluate. We have test holes that have been done on some of the adjacent ag areas where they've gone down, I think, around 1,000 feet. But I don't have, those were not completed if they were, if for whatever reason they decided not to do it. So I don't have any real deep wells. Could we expect that that would be the case? I'd say at this point in time, I would not want to go over the 1,200 feet, just because it could be indicative of it, yes. And so it's a learning lesson here. There are many places where you can go 2,000-3,000 feet and you'll hit good water. But within these Monterey shales, temperature gradients seem to be a bit high. In other words, the deeper you go, the warmer the water is going to get. And sulfur content does seem to pick up with depth.
Yeah, my second question was, this is at the site of the old Hermerick well. which from what I understand was not that didn't really have that much history. They only pumped for a year or two.
Yeah.
If we were to reestablish a well at the old levels, what kind of production would you expect out of that?
I think they did a couple hundred gallons a minute. It would be similar to the other well. So I think it was that about right?
I think it was on the order of a couple hundred gallons a minute. Now, we had a breech casing there. I don't know if that would change that or not. But the district has limited pumping history on it. I think it was, before we received the well.
I talked to Susie, and she said they only used it for alfalfa for a couple of years.
Oh, okay. So pretty limited.
Yeah, it's often hard. It's hard to get data on old ag wells. You don't really know how they pumped them. Instantaneous discharge, a couple hundred gallons a minute, would be reflective of what some of the district's other wells in this valley are. The Savage and the Church wells.
They do
about that. The well over on the Wheeler property was tested out at around 600, but I don't think that if you were to pump it year round, it wouldn't hold up at 600. And so we do see that instantaneous discharges are not reflective of long term. So you have to really discount things to reflect the amount of water you have in storage and how much recharge you get each year. So pump tests don't always tell you. If somebody says, oh yeah, well my well did 1,000 gallons a minute, you say, for how long, and was that during a drought? And then the answer will be more apparent to you.
Mr. Wynn.
I also talked to Susie Hermick about the well, its history, and Mr. Eby's quite correct. She said a couple of years. But we weren't able to pin down which 2 years those were and how that related to any preceding droughts or not.
Right.
So it doesn't give you much.
And how many acres, you probably know how many acres you irrigated. I mean, alfalfa definitely uses a lot of water.
Yes, they do.
But it doesn't use as much as it does in Paso. I mean, our ET rates are low here, so.
But there's some suggestion that it did affect nearby wells when they were doing it.
Okay. Yeah, well, and of course, that's what you'd expect.
And that's something that we set out not to do if we could at all avoid it, because these are people in our community.
Right. I generally think that you want to space your wells probably 1,000 feet or more away from other wells. If you get within 500 feet of a well and it's in the same zone, you'll see some fairly substantial drawdown.
But my question is to see if I can't intrigue you into venturing out on the thin ice here. You can't give us confident numbers, but could you give any kind of an informed guess based on your experience here as to if we did improve the well in this upper zone, any idea what kind of yields we might expect? My point.
You mean in terms of gallons per minute type of a yield?
Well, at not only gallons per minute, but then any kind of sustained drawing on that. And the reason
right.
I ask
yes.
is because if we would spend $40,000 to improve the upper level, and then it turns out that we get less than 100 gallons a minute, it doesn't even pay to do that.
Right. Well, of course, the big cost is equipping the well, and at this point in time, since we've already put in the casing, the big cost is equipping it and everything that involves hooking up to the system. The pumps, the cost of the pump, and the like. So, how much? Well, I have. I know that in the past, when you look again at Savage or Church, you're talking about a couple hundred acre feet per year was the amount. Those produced from probably better zones than we are getting here. These zones are. What we're dealing with is fractured rock, and you don't know how fractured it is. But I think in composite, I would expect that if we could, based on adjacent wells and how they produce, that we could get a couple hundred gallons per minute. I don't think I would expect to get six or seven. But I really, as a personal feeling, feel that more can be gotten out of this than we're getting. And sometimes you see substantial improvements. So I know that we've seen wells that produce between 600 and 800 gallons a minute from the same formations, but not necessarily the same fractured zones within those formations. So I think at this point, you could just say, if you just said, well, we've tried to develop it and this is what we got, well, then it's clearly not enough. Will this get better? I think it will. It'll take some effort, and then we want to see how the quality will vary, because even if we get, I mean, right now we tested the water, the salinity was at 4,700 milligrams per liter. If we could get it up to get rid of the bad stuff, will we get up to 800 milligrams per liter? I don't think, when you're talking about the valley here, you don't get the same quality you get out in the mesa. You get around probably twice the salinity in the water that you get out in the mesa. And that's a good well. So the total dissolved solids will be probably around 700-800 on a good well. Well, if you have a well that's maybe not so good, well, then you're over the limit of 1,000. So we don't have a lot of room for degradation of quality in these areas. But it does vary quite a bit, and there are some waters that are usable. So what are the chances that we'll get good water? Well, I don't think that you'd say that there are 100% chance. I mean, we're not 100% sure that we're going to get good enough water. I feel confident that the quality will be better than it is now, substantially, but will it be less than 1,000 milligrams per liter as total dissolved solids? I think that there's a good chance it won't. That's a straight skinny on it.
President Verheyen, if I...
Yes.
Again, what we've outlined, and Tim's given his best guesstimate with a number of $20,000 to $40,000, but what we've outlined, a procedure that the first couple steps are, as Tim has again estimated, is having a second opinion, look at the e-log, that's about a $1,500 expenditure, sealing off the lower portion of the well. Again, we're talking about maybe a couple thousand dollars. It's a pretty straightforward procedure.
And I think probably that it would be a good idea to do that regardless.
Right.
Because I would want to isolate. I don't want the zones interchanging.
Right.
Because if there is a difference in quality, we want to keep the bad stuff down.
So if we've got in other words, if that lower formation could be contaminating the what we'll call middle formation, knowing that the upper formation we sealed off. In any event, sealing that lower formation off and then taking a sample. I think at that point we could get a water sample, you know, bail the well out, get a water sample, and have quite a bit of information in regards to quality. Now, if we're seeing a significant increase in quality, and again, our TDS dropping from something like 4,700, which is where it sits now, down to 1,000 or below, then we can take in that information and make a decision as to whether we proceed with the more expensive part, and that is further development of the upper zone, or the middle zone of that well, and in hopes to increase then the production of the middle zone. So we can step at this a little bit. It's not a matter of committing to an expenditure on the order of $20,000 to $40,000 straight up with the information we have now. We can collect some more information. And that's what the staff's suggesting, is that we endeavor to collect some more information.
So you're projecting about $5,000 to cap it, the bottom portion, and then make the sample test before you...
Well, I would recommend a $10,000 number for the initial effort. When you deal with deep wells, it's just more of a hassle. You know, you can't just put a pump in and get something out. You have to set it down deep. You know, anyways, I don't want to go into that, but I'd recommend that you allow $10,000.
Okay, then I'd like to open this item up to public comment. Anybody from the public wishes to speak? Mr. Fox.
Homer Fox, I live in the district. I could tell the board, as a ratepayer, I would not be upset if you plugged the lower zone, did a water test, then possibly develop the well some more. As a ratepayer, I personally wouldn't be, I wouldn't object to that. But the other comment I have is, what does the ratepayer get when he has, when they pay for a test hole? Does the ratepayer get a water sample during a test hole procedure? And if the ratepayer does get the, or the district does get a water sample, would salty water have shown up in before the casing went in the hole? Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Fox. Staff care to
respond to that? In my understanding, and Tim can help me out if I am misunderstanding this, was that in order to sample that well, we had to case it. That we couldn't sample on a test bore basis because there'd be simply too much interference from the amount of drilling muds and production water that are used to drill the well. So that was something I believe we discussed at length with the board, and that in fact a casing would have to be put in. Some limited development, removal of mud would have to occur before a sample could be drawn from the well, and that's where we ended up. So we drew a sample as early as we could. I'm getting a head bob up and down by the geologist. So.
Any other public comment on this? Then seeing none, then we'll bring it back to the board for further comments, and we need to make a.
I'm really motion. Ignorant about the chemical composition of mud that's used. I realize it's not mud like I played in as a child. So that's you don't have to educate me because I'll stay ignorant after you're gone. But it seems to me that production water generally is fresh water. And if anything, it would have diluted the salt from a sample. It would not have increased the salt.
Yes, correct.
And therefore, we should have... I would think we'd have had some indication just from the water that's coming out of the hole.
It's really not something that you can do to test the water out. If you get to a higher concentration of salinity, you can know that. But it just wasn't evident based on the... you can't get a sample of water to test. We didn't have a clue that it would have the sulfur content that it has. There's just no way. The salinity is very much masked. You really can't tell. Can you get an indication? Well, if it's salty enough and if it's productive enough. See, when you're drilling, your whole intent is to seal off the zones, to keep them from falling in the hole, to keep them from changing the character of your drilling fluid, because if you don't get a proper seal, then the quality of the water will actually degrade the clays in the drilling fluid, and you can't complete the well. So the whole intent in drilling with mud is to seal the thing off, and so getting a sample and testing it really is not possible until you actually case the well. And that's where we did sample.
Okay, well, we need a motion then to receive this report and give further direction to staff.
I move that we receive the report as given, and that we instruct staff to take the first three steps that they have suggested to us, that they have the e-logs checked, seal the lower level. I think sealing the lower level is a responsible thing regardless of what we do next. Mm-hmm. And then to sample the upper level as we may, without going into further development of the well.
I'll second.
A motion by Mr. Wynn and a second by Mrs. Worsing. Madam Secretary?
Director Wynn?
Yes.
Director Worsing?
Yes.
Director Eby?
Yes.
Director Hernandez?
Yes. Thank you very much, Mr. Klee. Appreciate it. And members of the audience. Okay, item number E1 is our solid waste franchise interim rate increase. Mr. LeBrun.
Thank you, President Verheilig. What's in front of us today is simply making a decision on which option we want to approach our solid waste rate increase this year. As the board will recall, on February 23rd, Mr. Tom Martin of the South County Sanitary Service was in front of the board and shared with us some options. The basic option is that we do a 3.09% interim year rate increase. We discussed other options with the board back in February, which include mandatory solid waste requirement for the district, which is currently not in place, and what the garbage company calls a bundled service or waste wheeler service. And what staff's brought back today are three different options, which include some variants of mandatory solid waste, waste wheelers, and then just a simple, if you will, annual rate adjustment. And I just want to be clear, because a question has come up since my staff report went out from one of the directors, and that is that mandatory, as I've described or attempt to describe clearly in the staff report, is mandatory solid waste collection does provide then a benefit for all district customers in that it lowers the rate by an increment. But the reason we don't see a rate option, the three options we have, the lowest is a 3.09%, which is just provides the annual rate adjustment. It doesn't address mandatory. So the question was brought to me, how come if we add mandatory, I don't see 3.09% come down? The answer to that is that in each of the other two options, those are options one and two, the mandatory is grouped with the bundled service or the waste wheelers. And implementing bundled service with the waste wheelers raises the cost to our customers. The thought was that if we put those two together, one acts to lessen the pain of the other, if you will. And Mr. Martin explained to us in February that the bundled service, the waste wheelers, will be a requirement next year. And we thought it best to take that requirement, bring it forward, implement it the same time we implement mandatory, which again was given to us as a board direction, and then offset that level of increase. And that's what I have in option one, and there's an additional nuance in option one that's not included in option two, and that's for a one-time payment from the district to South County Sanitary Service of $50,000, and that would come from our solid waste reserve fund and help further offset the cost of implementing the waste wheeler program here in our community. If there are questions from the board or Mr. Martin's here in the audience today, and what staff is hoping for today is the board to direct select an option, or we're recommending option one, and then direct staff to come back to the board with an ordinance reflecting the option that the board so chooses, and then we go through a first read of an ordinance, and if mandatory is part of the option, then that requires a 45-day public notice period as outlined, and council can help us on what that procedure would be.
Any comments, questions of staff? Mr.
We all do.
Mr. Seitz?
I just wanted to make sure that Tom or somebody gives testimony that the bundled services, like when you take a look at option one, that includes three waste wheelers. I mean, it just so everybody understands that one includes the typical solid waste wheeler. It includes the wheeler for recycling, and it includes the waste wheeler for green waste. Is that right, Tom? And then I think the other thing, so as you go down through these can rates right here, these different sizes, maybe Tom can tell us how the actual waste wheelers increase. I know that, I believe the, at least it does for me, the larger the can size is, also reflects the larger blue wheeler. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. That's the recycled wheeler.
So,
if you know, you have questions for staff or Mr. Martin.
Well, I guess Mr. Martin could answer that too.
Then, Mr. Martin, could you be available?
I think what John's referring to is that as you look at those rates, your rate is determined by the size garbage can you have. You get a big green one and you get a big blue one, regardless of which size garbage you have. And the intent is to get you into the very smallest garbage can and get you into the very largest green and blue. It's not a requirement. You do not have to. We provide smaller blues and smaller greens because some people just don't have the need for a three-can waste wheeler. But the basis of it is what size you choose for your garbage can determines how much you pay. The other services just come with that.
So, Mrs. Wersing.
So then option two, does that not include the waste wheeler and the blue recycle?
No, option two does include mandatory and we'll call it bundled service, which is the three wheelers. But what it does not include is the one-time $50,000 payment from the district to South County Sanitary.
So then option three does not include the, so those are extra?
Those are extra. Option three is the annual rate adjustment of 3.09% based on the cost of living consumer price index. And then options one and two both have mandatory grouped with the bundled service. And the option two, like I said.
So I was trying to determine on option three if that, so say I had option two, I mean three, and I wanted a waste wheeler and a recycle wheeler, those would be extra on my?
Yes, we currently provide those.
They're $2 a month extra.
Yeah, I want to say $1.09 a piece.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
A piece, yeah.
Mr. Eve.
As I remember, last time we talked about this, what we asked for was the option for the recycle container, but not the green waste. And now you're saying the green waste is part of this?
It's a bundled, what's termed a bundled service. So
didn't we vote to not include the green waste last time?
No, not. I don't think so.
I remember Cliff making the motion, and I thought he left out the green.
I'm sorry I didn't include that. Maybe Tom can tell us if that is an option,
yeah,
sub-option.
What's driving the waste wheeler issue is workers' compensation. And if we don't do it for green waste, then we're kind of defeating the whole purpose of it, because then my guys are back to lifting up 50-pound trash cans full of grass. Okay. And that's,
understand.
Or heavier. Mr. Wynn?
I'm asking if it isn't possible, then the most expensive option would be one that's not, actually not listed here, and that would be that we would do non-mandatory, but include the wheelers that will be mandatory next year anyway, because of workman's comp. Wouldn't that be the most expensive option?
Yes, implementing mandatory service provides $25,000 of money going into the kitty. If you do not have that, then that will have to come from the ratepayers who are currently involved. So if you do not want to do mandatory and you want to do waste wheeler, if that's the direction, we can certainly come back and do that. That's not it really is up to you guys.
But it would be $25,000 then spread among the ratepayers.
Yes.
I had a question. Since we've moved here, getting on to 9 years now, we've never generated green waste. We've always composted and those kinds of things. So I do appreciate the bundle service. I'm getting to the point where the orange bin is, it's getting a little heavy. It'd be nice to wheel something out that's blue. But if I don't need a green waste wheeler, can I opt out of that?
Yeah.
In the bundle service? I mean, can I just not have it?
Yes, certainly you have the ability to opt out of it. The problem becomes in how do you address the cost issue with it.
Exactly.
Because the reality is that the truck drives down the street right past your house, regardless of whether you put anything out or not.
Right.
And the cost of dealing with your can of green waste is really pretty marginal when you get right down to it.
Yeah, except that I wouldn't have a green waste recycle.
To keep.
Yeah. On my premises. So the cost of that, I wouldn't have one to pay for.
If the board desires that to be one of the options, that certainly we can put together a scenario that basically what you would be eliminating is the cost of purchasing the waste wheeler depreciated over 7 years. So you're talking about $7 a year. So I mean we're talking in the neighborhood of something less than 50 cents. But to give you an idea, if that's what you want to.
I just wanted to throw it out because I know a lot of the people in my little immediate place there on Waypoint Drive. They have very few people put out anything for green waste. It's mainly just the garbage and then the recycle. So.
I would just comment.
Mr. Sykes?
Because I've seen other boards, councils go through this. And generally speaking, they just land on all three services. And there's probably two reasons. One is that bifurcating the actual service level doesn't really equate to a meaningful cost difference one way or the other. And two, the complication of enforcement. We can't draft a perfect ordinance that's going to affect everybody identically perfectly. It's just almost impossible. And then when you get down to the administration level of trying to administer a bifurcated service, for example, let's just say a green waste wheeler appears in front of that person's house, is going to be picked up because the truck driver isn't, I mean, the testimony's been in the past, the truck driver isn't going to be able to differentiate, because sometimes even myself, I hate to personalize this, sometimes we have green waste and sometimes we don't. We just don't put out the green waste wheeler when we don't have it.
Yeah.
But we still pay for it.
And he's not going to have a list that he checks at each stop to see if that happens to be on it. So, yeah, I don't mind paying for it. I just think having a can sitting around outside isn't going to be used is probably not a worthwhile thing.
I think the other thing that you will find is that you can use those cans for even, I mean, you don't put garbage in, obviously, in a green waste wheeler, but they're pretty handy for putting your tree limbs and stuff and carrying them over to the compost pile.
When you go ahead and mow the lawn, you can empty the lawn bag in there and then wheel it out in the backyard.
So yeah, and we've also found that while right now you currently compost all your stuff and you make that effort so that you don't generate anything at the curb, but if you do have the can, I think you'll find that sometimes it is just easier, if your area is full or whatever, that you can just put it on the curb and take care of it.
And at some point in time in my life, I expect that I may not be in the composting as much as I am now.
And again, the green waste that travels then out to the Coal Canyon landfill is in fact composted.
Is composted
so,
out
you know,
there.
For those that again, for some reason don't care to make the effort right now, or life changes say that they're unable to make that effort, you at least can have that peace of mind that would bring that it is composted.
Yeah.
Does the green waste count towards AB 939 compliance?
Yes, it does.
And that's another.
Yeah.
That's the Solid Waste Reduction Act of 91, 93, something in that order. I think it was 93, but for 50% reduction mandate.
Okay, Mr. Eby, you had a question then.
The $50,000, I assume, is coming out of this 100 and some thousand reserve you have from franchise fee?
That's right, our franchise fee reserve, and it's more on the order of
234.
I believe it's near.
Yeah, about 234.
I was just going to wonder if we do authorize that, is that going to jeopardize the street sweeping effort we were looking at to come out of that?
No.
could sweep a lot of streets for $234K, minus 50.
That's true. I have started to see what the cost of street sweeping is, and the price is not that exorbitant, actually. I've been pleasantly surprised.
Yes, if you notice, Teff Street has been swept.
Yes. Yes, I watched him do it yesterday evening. Very nice.
How it all went.
One more question for Mr. Martin, please. we're governed by our water district, by water rate payers. So how do you handle Cal Cities and rural water? And I mean, do they have higher rates than we would have? Or, you know, like we're a dual community here. You know, we people across the street wouldn't have to have mandatory where we would. And,
yeah.
You know, that's, I'm not real comfortable with that.
Currently in the county, it is not mandatory. But Cacho has indicated that if the district does go to mandatory, that the county will take up that issue, at least in the urban reserve lines. But at the present time, no, the customer across the street, you know, the lower side over there beyond Division, that's not in CSD, which we call the Bluff, they are not required to have service.
Right. And so they have choice.
They do. And their rates are very similar. Their commercial rates are a little bit higher than yours. Your commercial rates are a little bit lower because you've kind of kept things even between residential and commercial, where the county tends to shift more of the burden onto the commercial folks.
And so the commercial is very limited, though, in that area.
Yeah.
Larry? Mr. Wynn?
I went with the county task force on non-point source pollution, looking at where the pollution is coming from Osoflaka Lake. And one of the things we found was there are a lot of people on that south end of the mesa that are actually dumping stuff off the edge of the bluff.
Off the edge of the bluff, I hate to say it. Yeah.
And there's serious problems with that as well. So the county is going to have to look at that, and they are going to have to do some more in the way of not only giving them options, but requiring them to exercise the options.
Well, and they indicated that they were unwilling to pursue that unless the district went with it. Because as you say, having one side mandatory and across the street not being mandatory kind of creates a weird situation. So somebody's going to have to do it if that's the direction that you want it to go.
Okay, with that, I'd like to open it to public comment. Any public comment on the interim rate increase for solid waste, for our solid waste franchise? Then seeing none, we'll bring it back to the board, and we need a motion.
I move we adopt option one.
Second.
Okay, we have a motion by Mr. Eby and a second by Mr. Wynn. Madam Secretary, please call for the vote.
Director Eby?
Yes.
Director Wynn?
Yes.
Director
Worsley? I did have one more question.
Oh, I'm sorry. You're right. You did.
So how? This is a question that I have. So say we adopt mandatory today, and we have, you know, rate payers that, you know, live in mobile homes. So do you just descend upon them and deliver them to other wheelers and? Or how do they have to call up?
There's a process that has to go through, and it's going to take about 4 months to do the legalese part of it that you need to go through. And John can probably address that. But to answer your question, we send out a notice to people, and we say service is now mandatory, and here are your options. You can choose 1, 2, or 3 can garbage service, and you can get a blue can and a green can. And if you don't want it, you just check, I don't want the can. You are required to select one size of garbage. In the past, what we've done is if you don't respond within 2 months, we deliver you the smallest service garbage can that there is.
Okay, and one more question. Oceano has lower rates, and why is that?
What Oceano did was that they raised the rate on the 3-can waste wheeler up higher, mm-hmm. and they also pushed more of it over to their commercial sector.
Because there's a lot of mobile home parks, such as here in the Pomo, also?
It really is just a policy decision by the board. If you want to see lower residential rates, then you can raise commercial rates up a little higher. Instead of residential rates going up 5% and commercial going up 8, I mean, you can make the commercial 10 and the residential 3. I mean, it's...
Because I really see a hardship on the older folks that live in the mobile home parks.
Well, the mobile home parks that are here in Napomo have trash service now. You're not going to be impacting any of those because one of their operating requirements is that they do provide garbage service for their park. So, for the most part, it's going to be single-family residential who just choose not to subscribe to garbage service. They still are generating garbage, and their garbage is going somewhere, but they just don't have it picked up in front of their house.
Mrs. Wersing, if I forget to remember that you had a question, just slug me in the arm before we get too far along, please. Madam Secretary.
Director Wersing?
No.
Director Verhaeghe?
Yes. Okay, thank you very much, Mr. Martin. Item number E2 is a public hearing for the adoption of ordinance establishing new water and sewer capacity charges for new connections within the Black Lake and Town divisions, including capacity charges for supplemental water. Mr. LeBrun.
Brief introduction. This is our second reading and adoption. Again, these are capacity fees. I hope as you look at the attached ordinance, you receive my email or otherwise notice the conveyance ordinance was attached in error. And I did reference the directors to the package from our April 15th meeting, which had the correct ordinance for capacity fees. There have been no changes since the reading. We have properly public noticed this ordinance. I have fielded a number of calls from the development community, and I actually expected Mr. Jerry Bunin here today. He promised me he'd be in attendance to comment at least on this. I will say that most were at first shocked, wanted to find out if this fourfold increase, if you will, in water capacity, and that includes our supplemental water charge, applied to their projects. And when I said the answer was yes, they certainly do, unless you have a will serve and have paid fees at this point. That was, I think, at first, the folks were pretty excited about that. But the typical caller, after I spent about 5 minutes explaining the cost of supplemental water, why it's needed, and why new development will be paying this their fair share, they're actually quite understanding. It was I was pleasantly surprised on some calls that I thought would be very difficult. They ended up being reasonable calls, and the callers I think understood our position here. So,
okay. Well, thank you.
I just make a couple brief comments. Just for the record, the board has held a number of public workshops regarding these capacity charges and rates. What we're only adopting here is the capacity charges, or sometimes generically called connection fees. The actual rate, the bi-monthly rate, will come at a subsequent hearing because we have a 45-day notice period. These rates and these capacity charges are based on a study performed by a rate consultant. That rate consultant is Bob Reed. Mr. Reed personally appeared at these public workshops and appeared at the at the last meeting where we introduced these capacity charges. He has filed a report with the district, which was received on April 13, 2005, and has been available for public review. I believe it's been posted on the district website for those that were interested in it. We have filed or had two newspaper publications regarding these rates or these capacity charges, and I believe that the newspaper article did in turn refer to our website for those persons that wanted to review the rate study. With that, I'll just we've already reviewed a number of workshops, the analysis of the water issues on the Mesa and why it's important to get supplemental water. So I won't detail those here.
Any comments for staff from the board?
I'm sorry, just one last thing. What makes this ordinance a little bit different is that there's a 60-day, typically our ordinance can become effective on a 30-day time frame. These become effective on a 60-day because they're enacted pursuant to AB 1600, which has its own independent wait period.
Mm-hmm. Any comments at this time for staff from the board? We'd like to open it to public comment. Mr. Nestor.
Good morning, Greg Nestor. I'm here in Jerry's place as a representative from the Home Builders Association. I'm the past president for the last couple of years. We do understand the district's disposition and the approach they're taking towards the acquisition of supplemental water as a building and development community, and understand there's funding that has to support that. So we're not here to deny the ambitions of the board to figure out how to pay for the supplemental water that's felt to be needed. So that's kind of just a quick summary, and I believe Michael's comments are right. A quick education to most of the group to understand where we are as far as our goals and ambitions is kind of mitigating the immediate financial concerns that go with the hearing today. But one thing I want to do is ask you as a group to extend that same thought process to the advocation of level three that the county is considering. And the same dynamics that you're facing right here are graphic in traffic in our committee, and the building industry and development industry is again the one that will end up funding and bridging the gaps that exist right now. In my opinion, I don't think there's enough funds in the county process to do any of the top priority projects as established through the traffic committee. And that really puts the burden on new construction. We've had to face a similar situation as the county general plan is executed on Teff Street and the traffic impacts that go there. And we've had similar comments to the county groups, similar to yourself, to say, well, it looks like the burden is going to come to developers. They're willing to pay it. They just want a program. They want to know that a dollar handed to the program makes it on the ground, and in the form of traffic mitigation. So if you can take a lot of your water process thoughts and apply those to traffic, the level three advocation, I think, is going to hurt that sector of development. So it's food for thought. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Nestor. Any further public comment? And we'll bring it back to the board. Open it for questions and comments and
I just have an administrative question. Once we start collecting these capacity charges, how are they accounted for? Do we have a separate fund that we establish for capacity charges so we can identify how much goes in there?
Yeah, let me just answer that. Our capacity charges have two levels to them. One, there is a buy-in level to our existing system. Okay, those we are not required to account for. However, this, and it's articulated in our staff reports, that portion that's going towards the purchase of supplemental water from Santa Maria, that will be independently accounted for and reported to the district on an annual basis as that money accumulates in that account. So the answer to your question is yes, to the extent that these capacity charges reflect the purchase of supplemental water.
So then we're sure that that money is available for the supplemental water pipeline.
That's the whole idea behind the AB 1600 when you're when you're exacting fees from development for future purchases of infrastructure and capacity.
Yes, and I'm sure that Mrs. Bagnuta will lock those funds up tighter than Fort Knox. Mrs. Worsen.
Yes. The public notices, is that in the legal notices section of the newspaper and not as a display ad so that, you know, general public does read the legal notices, so... So it's not a display ad, it's a legal notice.
A legal notice.
Yeah, it's in the legal notice
section. I would also just comment, I mean, I'm not a great follower of all the South County newspapers, but there have been a number of articles published regarding these studies and this ordinance. But I think Director Worsing is correct. These notices are... in the public notice section of the newspaper.
It has gotten widespread distribution. Santa Maria Times, the Adobe, TPR, Tribune. So it's not unknown.
And the general public doesn't read it.
And additionally, I know.
They've had regular articles in the newspaper, NCSD, considering, you know, our name taken in vain, or maybe not vain, but anyway, we've gotten the notoriety. Mr. Wynn.
To tie in with what Ms. Wilson was saying, I think this is a small enough change we can make it without going back to the mats, but on the last page of the ordinance, I would like for Section 18 to say it would be published in the Five Cities Times Press Recorder and the Tribune.
That's fine.
I think there are more people who subscribe to the Tribune because it's a daily.
We actually checked that out because we weren't, you know, being where we're at here geographically, we wondered if the Tribune or the Santa Maria Times was best because, again, the Times Press Recorder is only a Wednesday, Friday. And Lisa checked that out and found out that the subscription rate to the Tribune in our area is about twice. Better than twice what the Santa Maria Times gets.
I'm confident that publishing the TPR would meet the legal standard of the paper of record, but I would like for more people.
Yeah, we went with both, which was, you know, conservative.
And the Adobe is not a paper of record legally, and therefore it would not serve the same purpose.
That's true.
The Five Cities Times Press Recorder only prints like 3,400 press run, so it's not very many.
But it is a paper
legal
record.
Yes.
Yeah, unfortunately, the Tribune is expensive.
So just one last thing that the board is going to move forward. At your prior meeting, you did introduce the ordinance. You did have a separate motion to read the ordinance by title only,
right,
which was adopted. So the only motion that would be required would be a motion to adopt the ordinance as presented.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Seitz. Then that would be okay. We have a motion by Mr. Wynn to adopt the ordinance with the one change in there. Looking for a second.
Second.
A second by Mr. Eby. Madam Secretary.
Director Williams?
Yes.
Director Eby?
Yes.
Director Worsing?
Yes.
Director Brown?
Yes. Thank you very much, all. Next item is Black Lake Treatment Plant Pond Liner Project. God, I can't believe the cost of some of this stuff. I thought Greg could get out there with his tractor, do a little grading, and we'd throw some visqueen in there, and, you know, that's it.
Yeah, that's a bit how maybe it was done some years ago, and that's why we're replacing the liner today. It was quite a thin liner, and we're going with a bit of a thicker liner this time. So
before we
not
started,
that Greg did it.
Not that it was
good. I'm sorry. Yeah.
Before we start, though, does anybody on the board want to take a short break?
approximately.
Okay, how about, well, that gives us about 8 minutes.
I think you should have Greg come up and at least go on the record and listen.
Okay. Thank you, everybody, for being so time conscious. Call the meeting back to order, item number E3. Mr. LeBrun.
Thank you, President Verheilig. Staff's looking for board direction and approval to go out to bid on a Black Lake treatment plant pond liner. And that's actually pond number one. That's our oldest of three ponds. The liner has been compromised for some time. The district is working with Gary and Taylor Associates to do our plans and an engineer's bid estimate, and that bid estimate is enclosed for the director's reference. We hope we come in on the low end of these estimates. We have budgeted in this year $100,000 to replace this liner, and you can see by the engineer's estimate that bids could come in quite a bit higher. I think when we originally budgeted, staff envisioned that our operations staff would handle sludge removal from the pond, and we've found that that's going to be a bit more of a job because of the constraints of the site. We don't have a place where we can pump that sludge out and dry it over there at the Black Lake facility, so it has to be wet pumped and transported. And so we've asked the engineer to include that in the bid, and I think that's about a 30, and they've got that as a, it's included with item two. Item two had been, I believe, about a $10,000 item until we included the sludge removal, and then that jumped up to $35,000. In any event, we do have at this time in the Black Lake Sewer Replacement Fund, that is the fund that these monies will be drawn from. We have approximately $151,000 in that fund. So we're hopeful we'll get out to bid on this. Are there any questions I might answer for the board? Be happy to.
Well, I have one question. It's not related to the pond, the liner, but
right.
Are these ponds fenced?
They are.
Okay, for safety purposes. Oh, yes. You know about that.
Yes, oh, yes. Fenced and posted is a no trespassing wastewater treatment facility.
I drive by there every day, you know, but I
right. Well, the fence is behind.
Can't remember if they're fenced.
It's behind the rows of eucalyptus from our side, and then you know, we've got to keep the golfers. You know, their ball goes over that way. They're inclined to head that way, but we've got to fence the whole perimeter of the facility's fence and well posted.
Okay, thank you.
However, ducks still use it.
They like anything.
And there was a beautiful wood duck there last year.
Ducks and the heron, mm-hmm. It's amazing. And yeah. And actually, there's the heron are fishing. I mean, there are some small fish that are in the third pond. There's a bit of a population of fish there, and a wetland. No.
So, any questions, Mr. Eby?
The way I read this, mm-hmm. the base bid and two of the alternates you can't even afford. How would you propose
the two alternates are actually based on the higher of the base bid. We've got base bid with alternate C and base bid with alternate D. What I expect to be able to afford is an alternate A, which would be a 40 mil high density. Our base bid's based on a very aggressive 100 mil polyethylene spray-in liner, and that's we thought we'd put it there and see what we get back. Now the 40 mil high density, that's a much more of an industry standard. That's a liner that's laid in place and then welded in the field, and so we expect the price to be quite a bit less for that. And then if we looked at alternate A and then included that with the alternate C and D, just to give us some options. I noted in the staff report we had hoped to see, we added this alternate C and D at the end just to see how the bids would come in. This would be one or the other. One includes a boat ramp that would provide us skiing access. No, I see Director Wynn over there wondering, what are we doing? But that's in order to access the pond with our boat that allows us then to do sludge testing and water quality testing. And another alternative way to accessing would be placing a floating dock, and that's what alternate D is, a floating dock with a guide wires and allow staff to access that way, again, to do testing and sampling of sludge depth across the pond. Currently, we don't have that access. We don't have that ability. We can, as we've shown, survive without it, but we did want to see what those options would cost us. So that's a bid process.
So these are these firm bids or are these estimates?
No, this is the engineer's estimate. So
yeah,
again, Gary and Taylor Associates have done the plans and the draft bid documents we have, and then have provided this estimate based on those plans. And
okay, so this is like what I call a top-down estimate, which is should cost, not a will cost as you've got a bid from somebody.
Absolutely.
Okay, so these are should costs, and my question again is, if they do come in at higher than this, you only have $150,000.
That's correct.
How do you propose, are you just going to take the least expensive option? Or the one least expensive?
So John has something to weigh in this, because again, it's my first way down this path, but we're hoping that we come in at least with one of the options, maybe the bare bones alternative A. That's a 40 mil liner, which is it's not Visqueen. It's much better than what we have in place. If that comes in, and we have to, no boat ramp and no floating dock, hopefully we can come in under our reserve fund. If not,
I think what the engineer's intent here is to give the board the ultimate flexibility in awarding the bid that comes in that the district can't afford. Now let's just say hypothetically that there is no bid that comes in with $150,000. My guess is staff would come back with a recommendation that you would borrow the money from another fund in order to support this project.
But Black Lake's out of money in the water fund, and the sewer fund was the only one that was healthy.
Right, but
where are you going to get it?
Well, we'd probably loan it from the town division. As long as the board does, this isn't a paper note. This is a real note. I mean, this is not a
with interest.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
In the recommendation of our rate consultant, because I've seen this recent questions go back and forth between our assistant administrator and Mr. Reed, is that would typically be done on lay of interest rates, because
right.
That's what we're earning on that money, and if we loan it, then the town would continue to earn on it at that rate. I think another potential option is we've got to keep an eye on the economy and the building industry right now, right? Things are beginning to slow. Bids, maybe it'll come back and we'll see that there are stronger signs of a change in the economy, and we might say, well, we've waited this long, why don't we retry these bids in 6 months? The climate could be much better, folks could be hungrier for work,
right.
That type of thing. So we have to weigh our options.
That's when we're going to get our house quote again for the paint job.
Right.
Well, see, I'm not going to be an engineer on this. I'm going to take your recommendation, and you got a whole bunch of different options here, and I assume one of them is most cost effective. What's your recommendation?
I want to get
some more questions here.
Actually, that is, I think I was going to ask the same question. Normally we get a staff recommendation in the staff packet, and it would say, here's the options, we kind of like this one. And I don't see that here.
Okay. But I think I probably confused you. The bids will go out with these alternates.
Right.
Oh,
all these alternates.
All these alternates will be in the bid package. So when you're going to see the actual bid numbers, and the board will have the opportunity to determine under which of these alternates, when we get the bids back,
okay,
makes the most sense for.
So today, all we're deciding is, are there any items here we would not want included on an RFP?
Yeah. Actually, it's not an RFP.
Okay.
I want to make sure we keep the vocabulary.
Okay. We're going out for
bids.
Yeah.
For a bid.
We're going out for a bid. And are there any of these that we would not want anybody to bid on? Is that what you're saying?
Or
well, it's actually staff's recommendation that we go out for bid with all these alternatives.
Okay.
And then that gives us the broadest set of options when the bids come in.
Okay, so that is the staff recommendation.
Yes.
And, of course, they will go out without the estimates on there.
Oh, of course.
Yeah.
So. Now, these estimates, again, you know, I've talked about that. I had a strong recommendation from a general manager I met with up in Templeton who said they never let the engineer's estimate out.
Right.
However, I will assure you that this board and this district always has, and in fact has today. This engineer's estimate is now public record.
Mm-hmm.
So I believe, I don't know if we've sent it out with the request for bids, but it doesn't take a very savvy contractor to simply request from us.
Aren't you telling us then that if we didn't want these to go out, this should have been handled in closed session?
No.
No?
They just wouldn't have come back to staff. I mean, there's a split out there. Some districts have the board look at the engineer's estimate as part of the public contracting process. Some agencies don't. You always want to get an engineer's estimate because you want to see if you have a chance of coming in within your budget.
Mm.
You know, I mean, it's a prudent thing to do. My kind of overall view is some people say the engineer's estimate is a good thing because it tells the contractors what the district is expecting in their bids. Some people say it's not a good idea because you're not likely to get a big variation off of the engineer's estimate. There's no right answer to that question. It's just there. I mean, my recommendation it would be is, A, Michael's absolutely right. This is a public record. But, you know, if an engineer requests it, I mean, if a bidder requests it, we're going to deliver it to them.
Continuing then, if the base bid were adopted as is, all 12 of those, and I'm looking here at like 14 and 15 on alternate A, and I'm looking at 17 and 18 on alternate B. Are those necessary additions to the base bid regardless of how we go, or would they only be added? How does that work?
Yeah, the stainless steel battens and hardware and penetration seal boots are only required if we do a lay-in liner, and that's alternatives A and B.
So spray-in would obviate the need for those two items.
Correct.
Okay.
So the way that's where the alternates are written up. You delete. No.
Then my next question for you is if alternate C and D were not adopted at some future date, does the base bid does that design give you some means of testing sludge, or does it just leave you where you are now?
It's where we are now, which it's more the water quality sampling across the basin. It's hard to get representative samples when you're standing on the edge of the basin. But
okay,
we're trying to keep our options open at this point. I could foresee us going with basically a bare bones alternate A if this is the way if the bids come in this way, because of our. Unfortunately, it's our funding constraints. And again, this project has been delayed for a number of years. This I'd have to say the liner is, you know, it's clearly been compromised, and we've got Thule wheats grown out of it.
It's been
I think the prudent approach, and hopefully we're on direction to be able to take these approaches in the future with the right type of rate structure. The prudent approach would be you replace the liner before it's fully compromised. And we're actually at that point, I believe, on the liner in basin two, but we're going to do our best to stay off of that liner, not because you can't touch it. It's that brittle, and preserve its integrity until we can build this fund back up. And as if we can reflect back to some of the graphs that Bob gave us, it's our Black Lake Sewer Replacement Fund that builds, and then at the end of the period, it takes that sharp drop. That's replacement of liner two being projected off in the future.
The reason I'm asking you about your ability to test sledge is it possible then that a bare bones, if we were forced to go that route, I'm not trying to prejudge where we'll go, okay. Is there a scenario in which we would do alternate A, which is your bare bones, plus say alternate D, where you had some means of testing?
Yes.
So that kind of recombination would still be possible?
Yes.
I had a question. What is the estimated life of these various liners? I mean, like the 100 mil polyurethane spray in, the polyethylene lay, and then the 45 mil hypalon.
That's a good question. I don't have those numbers. I'm familiar with the 40 mil high density, mm-hmm. And for what it's worth, they estimate the life of those to be on the order of 200 years when they're covered with trash and buried underground. Pretty tough environment. But where we've had our current liner has been compromised is where it's exposed on the surface to sunlight.
That tends to really turn polyethylene pretty brittle.
It
pretty quick.
It does. It depends on, I guess, the component makeup, and that's why you see the black polyethylenes with that help reduce that breakdown due to the exposure to the sun. And I understand hypalon to be a product that is actually better at its resistance to solar breakdown. I understand they use that in rubber boats, for instance. It's a much better product than your PVC rubber boat. You use a hypalon. But I don't have these, the numbers.
Okay,
available for
me. I think that's a reasonable judgment on. That's a reasonable item for consideration when we finally do look at what do we want to do. I guess the best would be you just spray in concrete, put in a concrete liner.
That's done. It is done in some cases. It's I can pretty much assure you we don't have the budget for that, but that's that assumes you'll never want to change the configuration of your basins and
all
how things happen.
Right.
But there are wastewater ponds that are concrete lined.
Mm-hmm. But that does lock in. So I'd like to open this up to public comment. Okay, seeing none, we'll bring it back to the board. And what we'll be doing is sending out a request for bid.
Hmm.
So we need a motion to do that. Mr. Wynn made the motion. We have a second by Mrs. Worsing. Madam Secretary, please call for the vote.
Director Wynn?
Yes.
Director Worsing?
Yes.
Director Eby?
Yes.
Director Verheyen?
Yes.
I have to say I like the way this came to us. When you get a full battery of options, we're in a much better position later on to consider than just going down the pipeline with one bid on one configuration, you're stuck.
Right. Mm. Thank you.
Yeah, this was very complete as far as all the items that needed to be considered. Okay, item number E4 is our summer internship. Mr. LeBrun.
Thank you, President Verheilich. This item was first on your agenda April 13th, and we weren't able to get to it, and we have brought it forward for the board's consideration today. What we envision here is hiring a student intern to help us implement a preventive maintenance system in the field operations. What we've provided some attachments here include questions and answers regarding the summer internship, and that's our second attachment, and what that does as far as benefits and district liability. We have a general job description for the summer intern, and within the staff report itself, we have an estimate of a total cost, and that's what I consider a maximum cost based on a maximum amount of hours that we could expect this intern to work. We're going to, with board approval here today, refine our job description and post that on the job sites at our various local colleges, and then conduct interviews. And we're going to look for a candidate that's that understands their databases and understands a geographical information system, and getting the two things to talk to each other. And hopefully that I staff feels that this will help us make a move to having a preventive maintenance system in place more rapidly. I think that's very important. So if there are any questions, I'd be happy to entertain those.
I have one, please.
Mrs. Wilson.
You have the, for the wages, yes. Social Security / Medicare. I thought Social Security was at, what, 12.4% or something?
The employee pays their portion, and then the district matches it.
Okay, so this is the extra.
The district's.
Okay, good. Okay.
Yeah, this is just what we would have to.
Okay, just wanted to clarify.
Cough up extra. Any other comments, questions?
I have a question.
Mr. Beebe?
On the education and experience, is it reasonable? I don't know if it is or not, but is it reasonable to expect that they know be proficient in Microsoft Word and Excel and GIS technology? I know the high school students I've dealt with recently didn't have Microsoft products. They used WordPerfect or something like that. They had a scaled down version of the cheaper stuff. So.
Right. We are targeting college students with
it's
this.
The same question, though.
Specifically.
Microsoft Office is not, even the student version is not cheap. So are they going to have it, do you expect?
Actually, I do expect it. And from my personal experience back when I was at Poly, and then also my personal experience more immediate, and that's with my two daughters. In fact, I purchased Microsoft Office Student Edition, and I was. Compared to the what we have to pay, it was pretty reasonable. But they're using it, and in fact, PowerPoint is becoming a pretty common software. So the entire Office suite
and the GIS programs, are they cognizant enough?
Yes. Again, I think that student we may be seeing coming out of it depends. A planning student and the engineering students are starting to use quite a bit more the geographic information system. So I'm optimistic that we'll find a candidate that's just right for this.
This will be very good for their resume.
Oh, yes.
It'll give them a lot of hands-on experience.
And it'd be great if this could be an engineering student who also is studying environmental and wastewater. But that's secondary. We need someone who can come in and say, "Oh, sure, that's your GIS system. Oh, yeah, great. I can link that database like that."
Yeah, I think it's a good idea. It's a stepping stone toward the general manager's job.
that's right. So another 8-10 years, I'll be ready to go.
Mr. Wayne.
Just a couple of comments. First, I would like to see whoever this intern is have completed 2 years of college.
I'm sorry, I missed that.
2 years. Two years of college.
Okay.
Instead of high school. And for a couple of reasons. I realize that we just need a certain thing of what we need, but we can get more bang for the buck. We actually hire somebody that has some career goals in this area. It's good for their curriculum vitae. It's a step stone for them, maybe a couple of steps before their general manager. But I just think there's more benefit that way. Secondly, I can tell you that Cal Poly is shifting over to an all-electronic, for example, all of our enrollment now is on computer. Everything's done. And we use Blackboard as a way of communicating with students, and they're required straight across the board to use Microsoft Office. And no other word processor is allowed but Word. And they download them to us by Blackboard, and we open them up and deal with them that way. Teachers teachers can't have every word processor on their you know, they're on the, at home and in their offices to deal with it. So we've shifted in that direction. Currently, I have, out of over 50 students in class, I only have one that uses WordPerfect. And she has to turn in a hard copy every time, and she's at a clear disadvantage. So the industry standard is shifting in that direction. And it's true, there are people I haven't caught up, but their number is dwindling, and policy is against it. So.
Okay, any other comments or questions?
What, by the way, when I say completed 2 years, I meant completed 2 years as of June this year. I don't mean as of today.
So you want a senior?
No, but frankly, it's going to be a person who's done 2 out of 5 years of study.
Okay.
Yeah, who maybe has completed John Hancock or Cuesta and is moving.
They're going to have a little math, they're going to have some GIS, they are going to have some of the tools that we need, and they're going to be a little better trained than we're going to get somebody out of high school.
It would be my preference to keep that as an option. I'm not sure the wording here, but that it's preferable, something like that, and so that again, we've got an option there. If in theory, if we limit it to 2 years completed college, I don't. And the theory being that the college takes 4 years to complete.
Five.
Well, again, my immediate experience is a daughter who's completing in four. Yeah! Anyway, with that theory in hand, though, I'm limiting myself to those students that are sophomores going to into their junior year, or juniors going to senior. Anyway, just to keep that open. Again, a media experience with student interns at my previous place of employment was if we could find a candidate who was mature, and sometimes we have college freshmen and sophomores who maybe took a different path after high school, and they're pretty mature individual, and then we know that this individual may be available next summer and the following summer, and we get a bit more there. So. You know, with the returning, and we say, hey, this worked out great. Are you going to be available next year? Possibly, and maybe that's something we can work. And then they gain more experience here. But it's just the thought of keeping it option. We could do something on the notice that says, you know, like we say, engineering majors are a plus. We could be more solid with saying, you know, third or fourth year college students are desired or something like that. But not to limit us.
The number of students who change majors is huge.
I'm sorry?
The number of students who change their major is massive.
Right.
And at currently, nearly 40% of them will change their major within the first 3 years of college, which means that you get people who will head down a line and may be right. interested in what we're doing, and they'll end up going off into archaeology or something else. And so I don't think we get as good a social return.
But if they're good with a database and they're good with geographic information systems, that's going to be our priority one. The students, this is not going to take specifically engineering knowledge. So again, to me, it's a matter of keeping options open and not restricting us unneedingly at this point until we see what kind of response we have. We may get overwhelming response and have the...
But this is basically the only time this board is going to have any voice in who you
sure.
hire.
That's correct.
So once we open these options up, if we get a high school student, a recent graduate, we're just going to have to live with it.
You're going to have to believe that there's a darn good reason that your staff chose a high school student or a first-year college student. That's right. And that's what I'm asking you to give us.
I think you would be able to tell.
I'm willing to give you the latitude of making the selection yourself.
Yeah, I think you probably have enough personnel.
I'm assuming that you're going to have enough candidates you'll be able to pick and choose, and you'll be able to pick the best.
I'm hopeful. And again, I'm not... discounting Director Wynn's points here, and they will be considered.
Even if they completed 1 year of college, they've shown a lot more than if they've just gotten out of high school.
Agreed.
I'm not comfortable with a high school grad.
Agreed.
I,
you obviously know the difference too. I'm not questioning your judgment. I'm just saying I can't imagine a scenario in which informed judgment would take a high school graduate over somebody that had at least a year of college.
Let me just. I want to give one example of that because again, it's a very personal in nature.
Yeah. Right.
My first year in college, I had been out of high school for 8 years.
Yeah.
And I would say I had quite a bit of experience and maturity and could have filled a role like this.
Different
so,
scenario.
So okay. There's different scenarios, and that's the thing I want to avoid the law.
Good point.
Okay, Mrs. Wersing, and then Mr. Seitz.
Okay, will this candidate be required to have a drug test?
Yeah,
I think so.
That's the board direction.
Right.
This is going to be a contract employee. Today. They'll be signing a contract. Mm-hmm.
But if they're driving department district vehicles,
yeah.
Which is a
suggestion.
Yeah.
At my personal experience.
That's probably something we want to add.
Let me tell you, you require a drug test, and you're candidates.
But now the way it works is you can't require candidates to have a drug test.
No,
but you say if selected, you're willing to.
Yeah, right. Well, it'll eliminate a lot of people from coming
right.
in.
Yeah, and that's probably something we want to add in. The
yes, it will be. Should be advertised.
Excellent. Good point.
The description. Mr. Seitz?
Actually, Michael hit the point right on. There's a lot of kids that went through the military that may be some type of engineering branch that will come in. It would be the cat's meow and be in their first year.
And I personally know some high school seniors. That, you know, why they're all girls, I don't know, but these girls are sharp, ambitious, and very smart. And they don't let grass grow under their feet, is what I'm saying. They have their focus in life. So what I'm saying is, I do tend to agree it'd be nice to maybe, for education, it'd be graduation from high school and 1 year college.
But again, the examples have been given us. There are real life experiences which frankly teach you more than you're going to get in your freshman year in college, which would be of value to the district. And seeing it from that perspective, I totally will.
Okay, then back if you're happy with that, then I'm happy with graduation from high school or equivalent. So,
as long as I have a driver's license.
Then I guess we will open this to public comment. Public comment on a summer intern for the district. Seeing none, we'll bring it back to the board. I'd like to get a motion.
I move we approve hiring of a summer intern per the recommendations of the general manager.
In a second?
Second that.
Okay, motion by Mr. Eby, a second by Mrs. Wersing. Madam Secretary.
Director Eby?
Yes.
Director Wersing?
Yes.
Director Wynn?
Yes.
Director Pahida?
Yes. E5, commercial service allocation. Form ad hoc committee to consider development of a commercial service allocation system, much like we did for residential. Mr. LeBrun.
Thank you, President Verheilig. And this item is on the agenda at the direction of your honorable board from our April 13th meeting. What staff is looking for here is the board to form and appoint members to an ad hoc committee to review commercial service allocation. Additionally, we'd like to define those goals and a timeline for that committee the best we can today. I think commercial allocation it presents some nuances that just I think this is why we didn't deal with it when we dealt with residential is we had a residential growth cap and residential customers the water use of residential customers is more predictable. It's something we can talk about averages better and the typical customer. And commercial, we don't have any of those elements. So what we need to do is find out maybe from other districts or through some exploratory work by the ad hoc committee, what types of systems are out there and can work, and then as needed, we'll get creative and form some sort of approach for commercial service allocation. So staff looks forward to having the assistance of this ad hoc committee to do that.
Okay, comments and questions from the board?
I'm very much in support of this. There was a time when I wasn't.
I know, I was the lone person sitting over here who said we needed it.
But what we have seen in recent commercial planning says that the model that we were originally given is no longer being adhered to, and therefore we have a problem that we need to nip as quickly as we can.
Well, we have an issue that we need to get our arms around and put some guidelines in place.
Yeah. Again, the implied contract in the past was that commercial growth would not be allowed to outstrip residential permitting, that we would have measured growth in residential growth would be tied to other constraints, primarily water, but other things too, and then that commercial would be virtually unlimited, but it would only really come in response to the demand of our residents. And what we're seeing currently is a tremendous amount of commercial permitting, way beyond any orderly foreseeable demand. And that whole paradigm can be turned on its head to say, now we have all this commercial growth, but we don't have enough people, and they're going to be blighted. And so we have to take the caps off residential growth, and to me that's chaos.
Exactly.
And it's particularly chaos in that it draws upon our water supplies in ways that we're not prepared to meet. And I think we just, I'm prepared to come back at it and look at it again. I'm not at all opposed.
Mr. Seitz.
Yeah, I just want to make sure that you have at least my initial thoughts. I think that the ad hoc committee can only look at commercial in the context of water and not these broader planning issues about is commercial outstripping residential or things. I mean, there may be a water nexus to that, but I think there would be a little difficulty coming back with a report based on land use planning. I think it needs to be kept consistent with what their draw is on the basin and how we look at the water and whether or not we need to allocate, you know, to commercial based on water. I think there are planning overlays to that, but I don't think that they should be paramount.
But to corrupt an old saying, if you build it, they will hydrate.
Is the staff or anybody aware of any other district or city that's on an allocation system that uses separate allocations for different types of connections? I'm thinking of Cambria. I think Templeton is on an allocation system. How do they?
I'm not directly aware. I haven't allotted or taken any time to investigate a commercial allocation system. I have heard, and I think it was repeated on the 13th, someone who was up at the podium, but that in some instances, commercial zone property are allocated, a certain acre feet by acreage. You know, it's X acre feet of water per acre of commercial or something like this, but just as a, I think that sounds to me more like a planning tool. I think the difficulty is when we see commercial applicants in front of us, they're building shells. Mm. They have no idea, and neither do we, what will ultimately be in that shell. And then even at the point when they do, that doesn't say what will be in that shell in 10 years from now. And when you've got, that means that this one right here, in fact, I think the laundromat expanded over time since it was initially envisioned. That laundromat expanded. Laundromats are pretty high water users. One thing we can say about commercial is that the brunt of the water use is returned into the sewer system. They don't tend to have a high irrigation demand. That can, you know, that we can dictate more clearly. But the actual use within that shell is very difficult for us to put a number on. But again, if we're talking about an allocation system, we're talking about a system that's not necessarily constraining them to some future number, but it's giving us a basis for saying, if we're trying to hold the district to 51 acre feet a year of allocation as we address water supply issues, and then we say, hey, that commercial, our best guesstimate is commercial is going to take half an acre foot per shell, or I don't know what we'll come up with, and then we pull it off our allocation. That means then there'll be less. Again, if we held that number, if we had 51 remain the number, and we started pulling commercial off that also, then that's going to basically close our allocation for the year sooner. It's more conservative.
But these are the issues that the ad hoc committee will have to grapple with, surely.
Grapple with, yeah.
Best we can. But I'm not familiar with systems that are in place right now. I haven't spent some time with that.
Mrs. Worsing, you have?
Yes. Most of, like, say, motels and things, you really know what that's going to be, you know, with their business license or their building permits or whatever. I guess we could gather that information. But you just, like you said, you just don't know with the water usage, because they should have maybe had some kind of, when they expanded their laundromat, then they should have had to come to the district somehow or other to say that they're going to add so many more units.
And they do. We've actually improved that communication process with the county, I think, in the last 6 or so months, where any, and I'm not sure the county process, but any permit use change that the county sees at their desk for applicants come in for a use change, or another trigger is a building permit, because we have another one out there at Orchard and Division, and there was an application for a laundromat again, and so they had to come in and do a building permit because they're making substantial changes. The county is now referring those to the district so that we can review that, and basically, though, we assess the capacity charges. At this point, we just assess, you know, the increased capacity charges based on our DUE, our due dwelling unit equivalent system, but that'll change with our new capacity. But we are at least picking up that additional use and applying it to capacity, and then that's going. But we don't have a limit, you know, per se, or an allocation to lob it off of against, you know, so we take it off an allocation, something like that.
Okay, well, we would then need a motion to, I guess we'll open this to public comment. Okay, just to be, whatever. Just for continuity, seeing no public comment, we'll bring it back to the board, and we'll need a motion then to for the approval of forming a ad hoc committee to consider commercial service allocation for water. You need a motion.
Well, I can move it all. I thought others would jump in ahead of me. I'm
Mr. Wynn has made the motion. Do we have a second from Mrs. Worsing? Okay, Madam Secretary.
Director Wynn?
Yes.
Director Worsing?
Yes.
Director Eby?
Yes.
Director Verheyen?
Yes. Now, I guess I can appoint the members. I would like to defer that till we have a full board here, if that's okay. Can I do that?
Absolutely.
Okay. Then we have formed the ad hoc committee, but no members have been appointed. Thank you.
Now, do I need to agendize in? We carry that
the appointments, or is that hand, can that be handled with the director's comment on the next agenda? Or
I just think you put at the very bottom the president's appointment to add on committees.
As an administrative
yeah.
Okay. And we'll carry that on every forthcoming agenda. Do we have a full board? I expect that, of course, to be at our next meeting.
Yeah, we'll have an interesting next meeting, too, I'm sure. Vision retreat. Let's make this short. Yes or no? I'll open it to public comment. Seeing none, we'll bring it back. Mr. LeBrun.
Thank you, President Verheilig. I'll keep my comments very brief. I added some general manager inputs. I think we heard from the directors as a whole when we considered this item or discussed it. I believe it was back in February, and I'm sorry I don't have that date here for us to reflect on. But a number of directors, I heard from a number of directors, we didn't want a touchy-feely type of thing, and I think I'd agree with that. However, from staff's position, a day out of the bright lights of the board hearing room where we can discuss some of the broader policy issues and directions that the board is taking or would like to take, I think could be a useful day. We do have, I have a name of a facilitator out of Santa Barbara County that I shared with the board last time, Roush, thank you, is the name. They've been doing this for some years. Came highly recommended out of Templeton Community Services District. I could look further into getting some other names and considerations for a facilitator. It's certainly the board's decision and staff looks for direction.
And what does a facilitator charge?
I don't know what a facilitator charges. I can imagine for a professional's day of service, we could easily be looking at $1,000 or $1,500.
Probably around that.
I'll do it for
no, no. No, no, no. Let me just throw some cold water on that issue. Generally speaking, what a facilitator does is he first interviews each of the directors and senior staff. That's one or two days right there. I just want to make sure everybody, I've been worked with these professionals. Each one has their own, and you may be able to curtail down. But generally speaking, before you have the meeting, the workshop, the facilitator wants to have a good idea what each of the board members is thinking of and what the direction is from these individual conferences. Now, maybe you can shortcut that, but I think that you're looking at, and then they go back and then they put together an agenda, so to speak, based on these individual meetings with the board members. So I think that if you say you're going to have then there's the backup report. There's the report that comes after the meeting. So I think that you should be thinking somewhere around 5 days of work. And I don't know what the charge is, but I don't think that
probably
one day
about
is
$5,000. $5,000 to $6,000.
I have just a general, looks like a lot of these items that have been suggested here could be maybe do very well as workshops, you know, that where we could really kind of handle it ourselves, or, you know, as a, like the operations versus policy examples.
Well, whatever you call it, a workshop, a vision retreat, or whatever, it's you know, is this something...
What is the desired outcome of this? When you're all done, what would you like to have accomplished?
What I would like to see accomplished is even though maybe not every board member agrees specifically, but there's an overall vision of the district in the future out there, what we will be doing, what it encompasses, how we will function between the board and staff and committees and those kinds of things, as well as infrastructure we may need to expand or upgrade or put in new, just to handle existing scenarios. You know, in other words, it's sort of like a roadmap. You know, where we're going to define something out there, and then the road to achieve that.
Goals,
but that's
goal setting for the next
goal setting,
you know, 10 year out, you know,
how we're going to get
that idea of looking out 10 years and understanding where each of the directors is seen, and to the ability we can bring that vision in focus for us all, and then say, well, that's right, yeah, I you know, we come to some agreement on what that looks like in 10 years from now, and make sure that staff is heading toward the proper.
Yeah, I think many times it's easier direction for people to agree on a goal than on how to get to that goal. That seems to be where there can be a lot more conflict. And of course, you know, that applies to these five board members. Other board members come online, they may have other thoughts, but this should be an iterative process that is done on a periodic basis to take into account the community's changes and so on and so forth, as well as other kinds of things that impact how we operate, rules, regulations, state legislation, ad nauseum.
I suppose this includes our attorney, so he can make sure that our goals are legal.
Well, this would all be
as we go along.
This would be all under the Brown Act. I mean, there's no way we can have a meeting, workshop, whatever you want to call it, even lunch at Mike's house. If we're all there, that's Brown Act. We've got to abide by those rules, you know, period. So
now the Board of Supervisors, for example, has held two of these this year.
One was in Morro Bay.
One was in Morro Bay, and one was at the Veterans Memorial Building in San Luis. They were well noticed in advance. The agendas were laid out in some detail, and the public did attend.
Mm-hmm. They are open to the public meetings.
But they did not tape them. And they wish now that they had taped them, because they were actually more insightful than sort of the meat and potatoes of an ordinary meeting.
Yeah.
But in an ideal world, if our general manager had more time, and he does not, I will stipulate that very clearly, I think we would get better return if he had a couple of hours with each director and could go down a scenario of questions. My concern with hiring somebody that not only doesn't know us, but doesn't know our business, is that most of the time I've spent in the past with such people, you're trying to educate them as to what the terms were and what the legal parameters were and all this kind of stuff. It wasn't very productive.
Yeah. Well, it sounds like this outfit or individual has worked with Templeton CSD before, so they probably have some.
Yeah, but they're very different from us.
They're different and they're similar. There are similarities and there are non-similarities.
Well, I'm willing to talk to anybody, any place, any time, so I just kind of choke on $5,000.
Well, I think one thing, too, Cliff sent me an email. He's not for the workshop, vision retreat, whatever you call it. And if it was held, he probably wouldn't come. So I just wanted to share that with you.
Did you say would or
would not come? He's not for it, and even if it was held, he probably would not attend.
And he said the same thing to me without saying probably.
I think it would be nice to maybe choose a few of these real important issues. We already know, you know, some things that we can, because that we're, you know, we're prohibited from really sharing our information with one another because we are under the Brown Act. But on certain things that maybe the would be more pertaining to what the community would like to see us do, more so than just, you know, the like the parks and to get a, and you know, by the way, about the water, the survey for the GP, for the recording of the meetings, the televising of the meetings.
Oh, AGP?
Yeah.
Video? Well, on the other side of the coin, we could, if we could decide to maybe have a special meeting and undertake several of these
right.
items. It'd be just, it would be, again, it'd be a public meeting. Mm-hmm. It would cost the district $500 plus Mr. Seitz's time, mm-hmm. so on and so forth, but that's rather than having a formal facilitated workshop or retreat.
That's so, that, I think that would be more productive. Mm-hmm.
That's
I kind of agree with Mike that that you're going to spend a lot of your time getting your facilitator up to speed, and the facilitator is probably is more motivated by getting people to agree and love each other than he is to really get your goals set for what you want to do. I mean, I've been to these things before, and they, yeah. and it's usually a psychologist that's running it, and there you go.
I'm heartbroken by that statement that you don't love me.
So goal setting, maybe reserve an agenda far enough in the future that we don't have anything on the agenda yet, but then reserve an agenda and a meeting specifically for, again, maybe some selection off these lists or other items that would...
I think if we have a fairly short agenda, which we've had in the past, this is turning out to be a little longer than I had hoped for, but we could undertake some of these. And I, you know, I still want to encourage all directors to provide some input, your thoughts. Some good thoughts were expressed today that could be discussed as part of a policy or goal for the district. So.
That's main things, traffic. No.
Yeah. So with that in mind,
when the supervisors agendized theirs and they had public comment on it, Eric Greening spoke up, and Eric's
right.
a person that I don't always agree with, but he's always thoughtful and thought-provoking.
Mm-hmm.
And he said he was opposed to them doing it because the idea of these is to get everybody together, get everybody to agree, to form teamwork. He said, you're not elected to be a team. You're elected to represent the people who elected you, the community, and that you should spend more time listening to them right. instead of buddying up with each other and finding how you can compromise and work with each other. Mm-hmm. And there is a sense, of course, we do need to work well with each other and to be cordial and civil and all those other things, and I think we have been as a board, but I think he makes a good point.
He does make an excellent point. I heard his presentation, on, at least I listened to it. On the
so radio. I have mixed feelings. If we hold it, I will be there. I you know, I'm not hostile in that sense. I'm not sure that the outcomes are going to be as productive as we might like. And if I had a clearer answer to Ed's question, you know, what do we plan to come up with in this? I might feel stronger, more supportive, but right now I'm very ambivalent. I'll go ahead if the rest of you want to, but I'm not going to urge you to do so.
Well, as I said, I have no vested interest in it in bringing it up. I just wanted to talk.
If we could hold a meeting in which I could convince Ed to vote the way I want him to on certain things. Or he convinced me, for that matter. Obviously, that's a different scenario. But yeah, some of the things that we have set out are things that we have different perspectives, which we have had for a long time. I don't see those changing necessarily because we have another meeting with a neutral person organizing.
Okay. Then I guess we should continue this item to a future point. Is that appropriate, Mr. Seitz?
Yeah, well, I think that the clear direction that at least I'm receiving is A, don't hire a facilitator.
Right. Mm-hmm.
That's true.
Maybe hold some workshops.
And B is instructing Mike to look at some possible dates for some goal setting workshops just for the board to attend.
Yeah, I like that.
But even putting on an agenda.
I like the agenda.
A meeting where we agenda an item.
Short meetings.
Yeah, one of our shorter meetings. So I'm trying to look forward to when that would be. But we can also dictate that. We can pick a regular board meeting date in the future and say, okay, we're going to keep the items off of this the best we can and delay that. I mean, we meet every 2 weeks, so it's not too difficult for me to let folks know that if they've got a pressing issue that it's at the next meeting, this agenda is full. By our definition, it is full. So we should schedule something like that. And I do think, I know Eric, and I understand his point, and at the same time, it is important for boards to share visions, because I think you find commonality. And then, and then of course, along the way, we voice the differences as what is the route of us getting to that common goal, and we work that route out in our normal daily business. But it is nice to take, and we can do it in the format we described, but to take some time aside and look together, look forward and say, what are we doing here when we're when we're in the trenches battling it out? What are we all after out there?
Well, it's the old saying, when you're up to your what in alligators, it's hard to remember you were there to drain the swamp. And we do a lot of alligator fighting. In other words, the individual combat takes your attention away from the big picture you were trying to do. So, okay, moving on to item number E7. It's our CSDA San Luis Chapter County, San Luis Obispo County Chapter elections. Need the board to provide me with recommendations for, and it's the CSDA representative to LAFCO. We have there, the openings are for a member and an alternate.
And who's on the, do you know who's on the list already?
No.
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 But we there is a scenario that we're aware of, and that is that we believe that the representative from Avila will not
I think you can take this to the bank, but I'm not giving you a whole lot of money to do it with. But Carolyn Moffitt is, I think you can take this to the bank, is not going to run. Stan Gustafson is the alternate from the Los Osos Community Services District. I think he has actually been attending the LAFCO meetings.
Yes, he has.
For Carolyn Moffitt.
Yes.
As the alternate. So so it looks to me like, we're going to be appointing the permanent, the LAFCO member for the 4-year term to replace Carolyn. And if that person is Stan Gustafson, then they would be an alternate.
And I personally, I think because he has served well as an alternate, he was certainly there when he was needed, and he has stepped in when Mrs. Moffitt could not be there, that not to support him, then to take that seat would be sort of a vote of no confidence. And I think he's earned our confidence.
yeah, I feel he's stepped up to the job and done at least as good, if not better.
He's been under a great deal of pressure in Los Osos. I mean, that could hardly come as a shock to anybody.
Well, that's the other thing, you know.
He handles himself well, I think.
If they raise the recall again, you know, he's one of the ones.
Is he one of them?
He's one of the ones on the list.
So who would the alternate be?
Well, that would be, you know, this board right here would like to suggest a member to be the alternate.
From our board here?
Yeah.
I ran for alternate last time this came up, along with Stan, and Stan was elected. And I think he's done a good job. I certainly would not. I would like to serve as alternate, but I would not like to run against Stan for the seat. I think he's done a good job.
Do you have interest in that, Larry?
Not at this time. No, my life is like the Lake Mead that's 50 feet above the dam. The water floweth plentifully. So.
Well, what's really up here? Is it electing an alternate or electing the member?
Well, if Stan...
Both.
It's actually both.
It's both, okay.
If Stan decides to not run as the member, then those two chairs or those two seats are up for election.
I have a call into him and we haven't talked yet. I would like to confirm that he's willing to go, but do you have any information on that?
No.
I don't either. But my operating assumption is that he'll go ahead. At least I would like to assume that unless he says otherwise.
Barbara Manns, is her term up?
She is stepping down.
Okay.
No, Carolyn Moffat is
stepping down. Carolyn Moffat is stepping down.
Barbara's seat is not up.
Barbara Mann is also president of the California Special Districts Association, SLO chapter. She's stepping down from that.
Yeah, they elect, exactly. The LAFCO seats are just like your seats. You elect one for 4 years, and 2 years later you elect another one for 4 years, so that you don't replace both of your LAFCO members on the same.
Right. So. I'm going to be, go ahead and... I have talked to Mike and has indicated that if Stan does want to run for the member seat, Mike would be happy to be the alternate. And I certainly would support Mike. If Stan does not, then, Mike could run for that seat. And I would support. But that's me, okay?
Now,
it's you other guys.
Not to oppose my own candidacy, but I can point out one issue, and that is there is one proposal already before the LAFCO from the POMO, and there are two more. Is it two? I think there's two more that are sort of in the pipeline for submission. And if we had a CSD person other than ourselves who would strongly support Napomo in this, we would be better served than having somebody there who must recuse himself. Or do you have to recuse yourself?
No, you do not have to recuse yourself.
Napomo Hills, I would have to, simply because I live across the street from it.
Yeah, you have to, you don't declare the conflict. There's no conflict because it's your district or your city.
Okay.
That is not a conflict. It is a conflict if you would otherwise have a conflict under the FPPC.
So I would with Napomo Hills, but that would be the only one.
But it cannot be based on.
That's probably where we'd need you the most.
Maybe.
Well, I got an idea. If he runs for the seat, it's because he's not running for the alternate, and I could run for the alternate. Then if he has to recuse himself on the Pomo Hills, I can step in on that.
So. That's right.
That's assuming that Stan does not run?
Yeah.
If Stan does not run.
I would be very supportive of that.
Okay, so we could.
Although, do you normally have an alternate from the same district?
Mm-hmm. No. You'd be breaking. There's no rule against it.
You'd be breaking.
You would be plowing
tradition.
Well, would it be better to put Ed in there? I don't know.
Because that's going to be major.
Well, it's already in the district.
There's two issues
yeah.
that are tied there. One is a general plan amendment and an annexation both. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that project has failed in the general.
Well, it's not only annexation, it's also an expansion of the sphere of influence.
Right, so it's
a twofer.
Yeah, so have they made application to LAFCO?
Yes.
And they're going back to the Board of Supervisors again with another GPA right now.
Mrs. Worsing?
So, for example, say Mike Wynn was nominated. So do you take consensus of what this board wants, or
I am the voting person.
You would listen to all the board members, but I would have to talk to other CSD members too, because remember, right. these two seats represent all community mm-hmm. service districts.
And I remember our LAFCO thing about the Maria Vista.
Yeah.
So I don't know.
There's two issues here, so let's just
try to separate them out. Mm-hmm. First of all, there's no annexations under the current rules without the board's approval.
Okay, that's right.
Okay, so the idea of a member on LAFCO being able to supersede the district board, I want to make sure everybody understands that can't.
That can't happen.
The LAFCO representative from special districts works on their own. There'll be issues with cities, there'll be issues with counties, there'll be issues with the CSAs, and there'll be issues with this district. You know, issues with this district, this board will take an independent vote on.
Yeah.
Traditionally, and Dwayne Picanso is on the city council, he doesn't ask the city council how he should vote on the Pomo issues. Mm-hmm. I want to make sure everybody, you know, because that's not what he's there to do. He's just there to represent a city perspective on annexations or spheres of influence or whatever.
And LAFCO will never approve the annexation into a district if that district board itself has voted no.
Exactly. That's true.
Not going to happen.
So I just want to make sure
here's where it comes up, since we don't have the audience here. It comes up because you just won't approve the property tax exchange resolution. That's the end of the deal.
Yeah.
I mean,
so we do have some safeguards.
Well, you have some absolute, the way the laws are right now, you have absolute safe.
So if Stan does run for the seat, do I have direction from the board to vote for Michael for alternate? Okay, that sounds good. And if Stan does not run for the seat, then what does the board wish me to do?
Well, I'd like to see somebody represent Napomo for the first time. But you know how we have our differences. So that's kind of, you know, it's kind of...
And do I have the board's permission to vote for Mike Wynn?
So if I say no, you already have a majority.
Well, I'm not going to vote on this. I'm asking for a direction.
Mm-hmm.
from the board.
Give me the scenario again.
If Stan runs for the LAFCO seat, then I have a direction from the board to vote for Mike Nguyen for the alternate. Mm-hmm. If Stan does not run for the LAFCO board position, I'd still like to recommend that Mike Nguyen be for that position, and then the alternate may come from some other
district.
Okay, well, it seems to me if we're willing to have him the alternate in the case that Gustafson runs for the seat, then we should be willing to have him take the seat if Gustafson doesn't run. Mm-hmm. Because in either case, it's liable to be an SC. Hmm. I guess my only question is, what happens if Gustafson doesn't run, Nguyen runs, doesn't get elected, then who do we put up for the alternate?
I think you've already decided that.
Yeah, that's Nguyen, well, second case.
Then I would recommend Mike Nguyen.
So they have sequential.
Yeah, they are sequential.
Okay. Yeah.
Okay. So I'll go along with that.
Okay. Thank you very much. Moving on to E9.
And by the way, I do appreciate your support. And Judith, I will listen.
Good.
Yeah. Seriously.
Well, I think you've...
I know that, man. I can twist your arm.
Well, if you don't, we'll be there arguing against you.
Yeah.
I'll go up there and ring your bell.
Yeah. I like that. Thank you.
Joint use of, this would be the second reading and adoption, item number E9, the second reading and adoption of the ordinance for joint use of excess capacity of the district's conveyance facilities. Mr. Seitz.
Yes, I am desperately holding my file this thing here. I just looked at the agenda packet and
the actual adoption of the language back in here. 220 had an A and a B. Hmm. And I think I just didn't catch this when I read it, but let me see if I have a. This is the water wielding ordinance. This is the third time it's been in front of you. At the last meeting when this ordinance was introduced, the board authorized two corrections, and this all has to do with Exhibit A. One of those corrections is made on what is attached, and that is we characterize the Napomo sub-area as the Napomo hydrologic sub-area. Mm-hmm. Which you will find those modifications at on the second complete paragraph, mm-hmm. the fourth complete paragraph on there, and
three places.
Yeah, and on the native water. Mm-hmm. Director Trotter had language under restrictions. 3.30.20. was approved by the board at the introduction without amendment, but the board also instructed staff to put in the following language. The district only consider transfers of supplemental water during the period of time that the district conveyance facilities have unused capacity. I apologize, when the agenda came back, I didn't see that correction wasn't made, but I do have the exact language. I can pass it around to the board if they want to see it, but I'll read it again into the record.
The district will only consider transfers of supplemental water during the period of time that the district conveyance facilities have unused capacity. This is actually right out of the code, if you recall the discussion, but Director Trotter, and I tend to agree with him, thought that it would make great sense to actually include that language out of the code in here as a restriction. So if some person came to us asking for the transfer, we could hand him the this ordinance, and it would include
it would
that
sort of stand on its own 2 feet.
Right.
And should we be challenged, it stands up better, obviously.
Yeah. Where he didn't have to search through a warehouse of documents. And then also on page 4 of the ordinance, we should add after 5 cities times press recorder and Tribune.
Did this go on the Tribune too? No. Yeah. Okay. This is two different issues, and that's fine. This is not a material amendment. The issue on the prior action about the wastewater capacity charges and the water capacity charges was a precondition to enacting the ordinance. We had to give notice.
Right.
This is a subsequent notice after we have passed the ordinance. If you want to have it published, and you have a choice here, one or both, either one works. This is a one publication issue.
A one publication requirement?
Right. We just published that we've adopted this ordinance during the 30-day period, so that the window closes on objections.
And knowing what the cost is in the Tribune, then I will retract my statement about the Tribune.
Let me ask a question of you. I hope this is not a substantial change. On the first page of the ordinance, under the third whereas, item 3, talks about DWR's findings for groundwater are consistent. And then it says the county's resource management system water supply criterion levels of severity 3. Now, it's consistent with the criterion, yes. It is not consistent. We can't say it's consistent with the county's adoption of this criterion, because they have voted level 2.
Right. This sort of, I guess staff's response is that would be a material revision. And if you recollect how this all came about, first of all, this is wording right out of his report. This is not wording that staff is not paraphrasing what he did. And in fact, we will probably use this language at these hearings to try to convince the county that they should be at a level 3. Okay. If you kind of remember, on the original ordinance, we listed all of Mr. Papadopoulos's findings.
Yeah.
The board did not want to include all of his findings in the original ordinance because there was some concern about his statement that sea level intrusion was somewhere like decades off. I forget the exact.
I objected to that.
Yeah, and so what staff...
Not specific.
So what staff did is they took the two top findings that were in the Papadopoulos report, but included all of his findings in the staff report.
Okay.
In order to address the concerns of the board.
Yeah. No, I agree with the language that's here.
Yeah.
At the time we drafted this, though, the staff recommendation, the county staff recommendation, was also for a level 3.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And they're being pushed pretty hard by a supervisor to change their recommendation. So I don't know.
We'll find out.
Yeah.
But see, we
will butt heads May 10th.
Yeah.
Anyway, it's fine the way it is.
Okay.
But I think it's important that we don't be understood to say something different.
And again,
You introduced this ordinance at your last meeting. You instructed staff to read it by title only. So the only motion that the board wants to move forward with this ordinance is to move for adoption.
So we'll now open it to public comment. Seeing none, bring it back and request a motion from the board by Mr. Nguyen.
Second.
Second by Mr. Eby. Madam Secretary.
Director Nguyen?
Yes.
Director Eby?
Yes.
Director Lissing?
Yes.
Director Barada?
Yes. Can we take a slight break here? It's getting on to noon, but at least time to go to the restroom or something like that.
10 or 15 years from saltwater intrusion, but I don't think we have findings that show that.
Let's say 10 minutes. Yeah. Let's take a 10-minute break.
Sure.
Okay. Thank you very much. Board is now back in session. Manager's report, Mr. LeBrun.
Brief manager's report. Get some highlights here. I think we talked about this last time. The Old Town trash cans have been ordered. They're on their way. $16,000 worth of trash cans, and we'll work with the Old Town Association once those cans are in to have the cans set. And once the cans are set, the district will work with the South County Sanitary Service to arrange pickup and emptying of those cans regularly. And this was brought up earlier, but on the street sweeping, I contacted two local, if you will, companies. One, an actual private street sweeper who never returned my call. And I had a live, it wasn't a message, I talked to a live body there and I never heard back from him. The other local entity was the county, whose street sweeper is idle right now due to our funding constraints that we just touched on a bit here, relative to the state's shifts of tax dollars. And looking into the county, that would take quite a bit of a long-term commitment from the district to get involved with something on the county's level, because they'd be hiring staff and they'd want a long-term commitment from the district to fund that position. We backed away from that, and in the meantime, I received a second or third follow-up from a company that's actually centered out of Gardena, California, but they have local folks here. They're called Clean Street, and received an offer from them. I asked them to give me an offer for a one-time sweeping of Teft from Dana School down to the intersection with Thompson, and then Thompson from Knotts to Day. And they said, how about if we run out there and sweep it for you, complimentary, and see what you think about that. And then we talked about the district. I said, that'd be fine. I says, come on out and give it a try. I said, there's a lot of sand, a lot of buildup. I'd be willing to negotiate further from your position of complimentary. We've since talked, and they've been at that for 2.5 days sweeping that section of the road. I think they've done quite a nice job. Mm-hmm. And the owner of the company is going to call me once he gets his hours from this guy, and we're going to talk. I've already committed that we'll pick up disposal fees, because I said that we don't have a location to dispose. We want the material to go to a landfill, recognizing that there's to the naked eye it may look like sand, but there can be quite a few pollutants there. In any event, I think that's gone well, and I'll bring results and costs and estimates as they're derived for regular street sweeping of that area back in front of the board when we have that.
Yeah, it's pretty obvious that you just can't let it go.
No.
Because it's not quite as bad as Strand Way in Oceano, where, you know, if they don't bulldoze some of that sand, pretty soon all the view that those homeowners have on the front will be of a sand dune that's over the top of their house. But it does accumulate a lot of sand and just things.
I did have a question. Mm-hmm. Trash cans were not ordered for the west side? Trash receptacles.
I don't know that. We ordered
a total of 12.
We ordered 12 at this point. And we're
originally there was supposed to be the South.
I think we're committed to doing the West Side, but part of the problem is the West Side Design Group, the main impetus behind that was John Bowen, who died.
Yeah, who died, and that's sort of...
And the committee has not really picked up steam since then.
And at our last meeting, which was before John passed away, there were still enough issues with the design plan between the committee and the county that it went back again for another rehash. I mean, that's got to be about the third final administrative draft that we looked at, because I have them at home. And, you know, here we go once more around the corral, so.
Sounds like we'll be able to get trash cans as soon as they're ready. That's what I want.
Yeah. And of course, as was pointed out by Mrs. Bognuda, and rightfully so, that the price in the catalog, which was $900 and some, $935, went up by 25%, roughly.
And shipping.
Plus shipping.
Plus shipping.
But steel costs have gone through the roof.
Yeah, because
we've seen that
China
over
is taking all the steel.
China's taking all the steel and gas. That's what they're doing. Steel and gas. I mean, we send over there those cute little things.
Yeah.
So it's made in China.
I stay out of that Walmart.
I did see a typo in the safety program. It wasn't all staff. It was actually all staff. But then, nothing really there. I try to provide something on the Santa Maria pipeline each time. I've heard loud and clear from the directors that the feeling is that this is not moving along quickly enough, and I want to assure you that the staff is doing all that is prudent. We're doing, of course, the CEQA work right now. Mr. Wood and I are in regular contact on his progress there. In fact, there's a 10-page fax on my desk with the latest breaking news, I'm sure. But what I'm also doing here is working at Cannon Associates, who, of course, did our preliminary engineering report, to sign on to our new engineering services agreement. And then, of course, through our new policy that the board has supported your general manager on, I will have the ability to work with Cannon Associates to provide a level of support as the process moves forward and in developing and timelines and staying abreast of changes that may or may not occur with Caltrans and the bridge, since that's going to be an important aspect for us, and then updating information as early as possible in the process and giving us some consulting and some direction on when it's prudent to start meeting with various parties as our options are become more clear. That's all I've got there. I would like to get, I don't know if this is a good time, but I hope so, a time set for a meeting with both the annexation subcommittee. I think we need to sit down and do one more internal meeting and then call back our applicants in Area 1, notably the Crystal Oaks Ranch, thank you, being called now, and also the Urban Water Management Plan subcommittee. We have two proposals in response to our request for proposals. Mm. That's something there where I had a number of responses. We sent out probably the 20 firms. We had a number of responses from folks who said, we're really busy. And the Urban Water Management Plans are, it's a state mandate to update those in 2005. We're probably out of the gate a little bit slow with our request for proposals. So we had a number of firms that said, we're not taking on new work at this time. We could entertain that request in September. But again, that would put us beyond the mandated timeline. Both our proposals that we have on the table or returned to us look for completion in the fall. I believe one's in the October timeframe and one's in November. In any event, as I understand it, I had a discussion with the water resources manager from the city of Paso Robles, and he was picking himself up off the ground after he had a bid from their contractor who did their water management plan the first time, and he received a bid for an update, and it was blown away by the cost. And I shared with him that firm was one of the firms that wrote us and told us they're not looking for any work right now, so maybe that's what they were saying to him with their bid. Our options are a bit limited, but I'd like to meet with the subcommittee and make decisions.
A time? Next week, I'm assuming, certainly not
next week,
anytime please. This week. I'm good Monday morning, Wednesday morning, Friday morning.
Do you have an afternoon?
I teach every afternoon but Friday.
Does that work?
Friday afternoon.
Friday afternoon? Okay. What time?
Well, about 3 p.m.
3?
3 p.m. here?
That'd be good for you.
That'd be fine.
Okay. That is the May 6th.
That's the 6th.
3 p.m. here. Okay, that's great.
It follows the National Day of Prayer, so we should be ready for it.
Yeah.
Well, I'm looking also, it follows, of course, the Battle of Puebla. And
that's right.
Remembrance
Day.
Yes,
it is.
Cinco de Mayo.
Well, and since you mentioned that, Cinco de Mayo is actually based on the Battle of Puebla, which was
yes, that's what I'm saying.
Yes,
battle, but not Mexico's Independence Day, which is true. Which came some months later.
They fought off the French that day.
I'm sorry.
They drove the French out that day.
Yes. That's good.
When you have a Dos Equis in one hand, it doesn't matter what's going on in the world.
So we have that said, and then I'll look to the annexation subcommittee, and also all the directors looking at their calendars. You forwarded the draft budget now, and we would like to schedule a budget study session, and we'll look toward the week of May 9th, or the week of May 16th from that. I'm not sure how that's been done in the past. We usually coincide with the meeting, or do we go to a Friday morning coffee and donut?
Coffee and donut, Friday morning, 9 a.m.
Friday morning the 13th?
Friday the 13th is good.
Oh, that might be
bad.
No,
I'm not super.
We shouldn't be superstitious, because that's bad luck.
Okay.
It's Friday the 13th is better than Monday the 13th. I'll tell you that.
Yeah.
Friday is better than Monday.
Yeah.
Okay, so Friday the 13th at 9 a.m., is that my...
That's good.
Yeah, that's great. That's my only open day that...
Well, we took care of that.
May has just been a joke. There's more red.
Then it started. And then by the annexation subcommittee and Mike, you have a date or time that we're...
Let's see. Annexation subcommittee. I'm good. I'm good next week or the week after. It depends on the time of day you're looking at.
How about Tuesday morning? Possibly the 3rd. No?
Can't do the 3rd. I'm open Monday morning, Wednesday morning, all day Thursday and Friday.
Monday morning is good for me. Wednesday morning is good for me. So.
Let's do Wednesday morning then.
Okay. Wednesday morning is okay.
Is that okay?
Yeah.
What time?
Going once. What time do you guys want to be here?
8, 9, 10. I don't care.
We've got RAC that comes up later in the day.
Yeah. The earliest possible, I guess.
8?
8 a.m.?
Okay.
Is that...
As good as any, or as bad as any.
Is that okay, Ed?
Sure.
Okay.
Appreciate the commitment.
Okay. Well, that's good.
So that's Wednesday morning, the 4th of May, 8 a.m. conference room.
Yeah.
Great.
Good.
Great. And that is, of course, I'll entertain any questions, but I'll
questions for the general manager on his report or other issues relating to that position?
Let me see real quick. I assume that the comment on the Santa Maria pipeline, when it says we'll focus on two primary options, we're eliminating expenditures on the other three alternates?
Not entirely. Our CEQA consultant will treat those, but in a reduced manner so that if for some reason the two primary options fell out completely, we would have some fallback position on.
Yeah, plus
I just know the sooner we can eliminate options, we save money.
But in the CEQA process, you still have to address those.
They're required. He's required to evaluate alternates.
Okay.
Otherwise, person could challenge it and without even breathing, force us to go back and revisit all those.
Well, and on that, and it's clicking something in my mind that I talked to the CEQA consultant specifically about, and that was the growth-inducing impact, and the thought that as long as we stayed with a general plan, then we would this project would not have a growth-inducing impact, and we shouldn't have to be addressing that. And the consultant's position on this is that we need to recognize that while the water decisions aren't the final decisions in growth, they are a hurdle that's got to be crossed in growth. And so his point there is that you address it straight up and you say, you know, this will allow growth within that envisioned by the general plan, but you deal with that issue straight up. And that you don't attempt to take a line that says, well, we're not the ultimate planning agency, and therefore, even if we have all the water in the world on tap, we don't induce growth. And I just say that, I can have further discussion, but I think it's a...
Actually, I suppose we're not allowed to discuss now, so I won't persist except to say, wrong.
Okay. I guess...
I'm not you.
I know, to the consultant, and I guess if we need to give the consultant, if this board, I think we hired an expert in CEQA, and I'd like to give that expert the latitude to approach this, but if we need something different, then we need to bring him back.
Well, I he's going to prepare a draft, and he's going to circulate it, and we can get back our comments, and then when we finally approve it, we can make what modifications we deem appropriate.
Okay.
So I
when it circulates, will you get a copy also?
I hope so.
Okay. Because the legality of what does or does not constitute a CEQA impact is something that we need a legal opinion.
Right. And the other issue is that we have experience with the very thing that Michael said, because that's the very basis we defended the Save the Mesa lawsuit on.
Right.
Was that very point.
Actually, what you defended to Save the Mesa lawsuit is they sued the wrong person.
Right.
Well. Okay.
That's what Save the Mesa did. But on the other hand, we defended that. I mean, the judge's ruling was crystal clear that we were not a planning agency.
Yeah. So.
And this in my mind doesn't change that perspective.
Thank you, Mr. Seitz. Seeing no further questions of the general manager, we'd like to move on to committee reports. Mrs. Worsing?
About the conservation. I'm going to jump back into my scenario or whatever, my first draft of what suggestions and things that may be. Then I will pass it on to Mr. Wynn for him to critique.
Great.
Hopefully thank not red right line.
Well, I usually do, but I'll notice some other color.
Okay, a gentle blue.
Minor red line, so Judith, don't feel like you're the only one.
It's, let's say it's common practice in the industry that, red line.
I had a student bring a paper that I had given a C to. It looked like it had died the death of a thousand cuts, read all over the place. And he said, I took this to the writing lab and they didn't find any of the mistakes you did. And I said, well, just goes to show their level of competence is not what should be desired.
But remember, I'm not in college.
That's quite right, quite right. And okay. I will.
Any other committee reports? Okay, then we'll go to director comments. And let's see, I think I started with Mr. Trotter last time, so this time we'll start with Mr. Wynn.
I will be brief.
Hallelujah.
Surprise, surprise. just two things quickly. First, the Water Resource Advisory Council will meet a week from today in the afternoon at 1:30 in San Luis Obispo. I will tell you quite frankly that staff are being pushed very, very hard by our supervisor to change their recommendations to a level two. And they're having a hard time because they're employed by him to stand up and say, no, that's just not what the data calls for. So they're going to need all the help that we can give them in assisting to reaffirm what the RAC already voted to do, which was to support a level three level of severity. I would like to see staff, either general manager or legal counsel, and you choose among yourselves, but I would like to see you make a presentation to the RAC on that day, and I would certainly agendize enough time for you to make that presentation. They're really getting pushed, and they're not in a position they can push back.
And our summit station.
Pardon?
Summit station, DIR station.
I know. So it is coming up. I hope others, you're all welcome to attend, by the way, and speak to the issues in public comment. And so that's certainly one thing that's, I think, very important to us. Again, publicly, I sure appreciate what Ed did with the advisory council here. They had been kind of nudged away from that, and they were brought back to support of what they should do, and they did do it, and I'm thankful for that.
Nice.
Secondly, I can tell you that last Wednesday I was invited to meet with a group called Committee Inc., which is the Committee for the Improvement of North County. That's a Santa Barbara County committee that centers on North County, their North County issues. And other chamber presidents were there and some mayors and other such people. And they are very interested not only in the pipeline, but they are interested in the kind of development that may or may not take place here in Napomo. Frankly, the vision that we've had and the policies we've had have been good for them as well as good for us. So I will continue to stay in contact with them and report back to you from time to time. I know Guadalupe in particular is saying, what's going to happen to all the population that's growing off in the west end of Mesa, and how's that going to affect traffic and such. But that's beyond our purview. But water is a critical issue for them as well as for us. And I'll keep you apprised as we go along.
Mr. Eby?
Regarding the NCAC, I was able to get them to vote 9-3 for to recommend to the Board of Supervisors for a level 3. I kind of hesitated ahead of time because I didn't want to go before them a second time and have them turn it down. I thought that would have been worse than nothing at all. But I figured after talking to a few people that there were some technical issues that people didn't understand and I was able to do that. And I hope that since I won't be able to go to the RAC next week, I hope that you, Mike, can give them a presentation and feel free to use any of those slides that I had in there.
I appreciate it.
All of it might not be appropriate, but I think some of them might be helpful.
A great starting point.
The main issue that I tried to make was a level three is a condition you acknowledge. What you do about it is another thing. And just because you say level three doesn't mean you have to have moratorium. You can have moratorium or other appropriate measures, and my story was the NCSD offers other appropriate measures in supplemental water. So that's that would see Cacho sees level three equals moratorium. And that's what I tried to get him off of, and I thought I did, that there didn't have to be moratorium. All it had to be was other appropriate measures. So I don't know if that stuck or not. The other thing is this isn't really an NCSD purview, but
these are just director's comments.
Yeah.
Neither was planning at Mason.
Dana Adobe's having a celebration Heritage Day on May 21st. It's an all-day affair. You can go in during the day and pay $3 or $4 and see dancing and plays and so forth. You can also go to the celebration at night, which is a barbecue, chicken barbecue, and a concert. Dave Stamey and Audrey Auld are performing that night. The tickets for the nighttime affair are $35 per person or $65 per couple. It's tax deductible. All but $10 per ticket is tax deductible. If you buy those tickets, there's more. If you buy the evening ticket, it allows you to come in free for the whole day. And during the day, they're going to have some plays and dancing, and etc. I just happen to have some tickets for sale here. If anybody has a checkbook and wants to make this tax-deductible donation. The other thing, the serious part, is where I put on my serious hat. I'm still concerned about the uncertainties in our water planning. I don't think we have a well-based estimate on the amount of water we need at build-out. I suspect that this will come out of the Urban Water Management Plan, but that's not going to be done until the end of the year. As far as supplemental water, my concern there is we don't, at this point, have an end-to-end design configuration. We have several design options. We're concentrating on the Santa Maria River, but we don't own 1 inch of pipeline or right-of-way between this side of the Santa Maria River and our hookup point in Southland. We've got some concepts and some ideas, but we don't have a firm design configuration that we're working to. It's still open. We don't have a detailed schedule showing critical milestones. We do have, and we can't have that really until we have the design configuration complete, so we know exactly how we're going to get the water from point A to point B. We do have what I consider an adequate schedule for the CEQA. And until we have a schedule as detailed as the CEQA schedule is for the rest of the program, I don't think that we can predict when we're going to have water here. Third, we don't have a credible cost estimate. We can't have a credible cost estimate until you have a firm design configuration and until you have a schedule. So because of that, I still have problems with will serve intent to serve letters. I don't see how, in good conscience, we can continue to obligate more water from our aquifer without even knowing how much is in the aquifer. I heard somebody say a couple weeks ago that we have 77,000 acre feet in the aquifer in storage. That was a number that was predicted by the, or calculated by the DWR in 1995, which 10 years ago. If you extrapolate their model, it says we have 63,000 acre feet in there now. And that's not in storage, that's just water that's passing through. So, and that includes a year that we had the greatest rainfall in history, 1998. In that year, it contributed probably 10,000 acre feet to the aquifer. But in that same period of time, we had the last 3 years, we were losing 6,000 acre feet per year. So I don't think that we can rest on any laurels that we have 77,000 acre feet in storage, because we don't have it in storage, it's just passing through. So the problems I have with future intent to serve, will serve letters, is the water table is dropping, we don't have certainty in the numbers on supplemental water as to how we're going to do it, when it's going to get here, and how much it's going to cost. So you're going to be hearing my concern about that in the future. That's all I have.
Mrs. Worsing?
Thank you. First, I would like to thank staff for putting in the agenda for in the Telegram Tribune. It was printed. It didn't cover everything, but they had a whole lot that. So then I noticed that LAFCO, you know, I'm not a tree hugger, but I noticed that they do their, you know, double side. What would that do to help us print our agenda on our whole page?
But you'd have the back sides of pages to view the front side of pages through.
It's just a thought that I've noticed this several times, and I forget to mention it.
I'm not sure what they hand to their directors. Is that the proper term for LAFCO? Commissioners, thank you. But often the my experience has been that the board that's working with the agenda looks for one-sided copies. If this board would like to see two-sided copies, we staff can facilitate that.
Our duplex attends the jail, which would create
cause trouble.
We'll have a whiz bang copier come. If we get through our budget process with you all, we have in there a copier, scanner, fax that allows to do much more digitally and for agendas and materials digitally, and also I'm sure be able to do duplex. If that's the board's desire, staff would be happy to facilitate.
We'll look into that further when you get the new copier. Okay. Does it save on postage? How you have to mail some of these out and stuff?
Yes, sir. We'd be happy to send the whole thing to you electronically, and well, the district will save on it all, but then it pushes those costs off, we will always print and deliver to our directors in appreciation for the service.
Okay, well, I do have a few items, and in support of the one-sided, it gives you a place to write on.
Yeah.
So you can ask questions. You don't have to try and do it in the margins. Margins have always been inadequate. A few comments, and I'm going to be brief. May-June is the time for legal counsel evaluation, as opposed to what I did for the general manager, since I don't know how to evaluate a lawyer. I am not going to make up a sheet to check or write on, or I think it just be, it'll be Mr. Seitz will obviously not be here, and we will just verbally do it, if the board doesn't mind.
I would be curious how Mr. Seitz is evaluated elsewhere that he has found helpful. Not today, so some kinds of evaluation are useless to you. It's simply, we like you, we don't like you. Other kinds of evaluations actually give you useful information.
Yeah. So.
Yeah, I would just say this. I have never seen a good way to evaluate a lawyer. And the reason why is because we are task-oriented. I mean, we're not in charge of the general administration of the district or stuff, you know, we get assignments and we do the assignments. So I think we are harder to evaluate. And I do kind of think overall it is kind of impressions, you know, that do count more than saying you should have, you know, we want your contracts to focus more on this issue or you know, it's just difficult to do.
Well, there are certain things we could look at past resolutions and ordinances, and have they always been, you know, complete and up to snuff? And,
sure.
Well,
you know,
yeah.
Those kinds. But that's just one small facet, and the others I don't know how to put down on a piece of paper to give a yes, no, or 1 to 5 or whatever. Anyway, the NCA subcommittee for Crystal Oaks will be having their first meeting May 3rd at between 9 and 2 at RRM Design, and I am on that committee as a representative of California Native Plant Society, so I'll be addressing those issues. Yeah. I don't have anything to do with water.
Good.
So that that.
Do you have the RSVP?
I've already.
I mean, for if 10 board members.
No, this is just a subcommittee meeting, the NCAC subcommittee meeting with Greg Nestor, Clara, and RRM Design, who I assume is the firm that they've contracted with to do the design. In other words, it's what does the community want to see? Then that'll be brought back to the NCAC as a whole, and we'll go through that process probably many times. Last item is next week on Monday and Wednesday, Mr. Eby and I will be meeting individually with Board of Supervisor members to discuss level of severity.
Good.
For their May 10th meeting.
Do you have talking points, or?
We have talking points. And so that, and then of course, it's still not too late if you'd like to stand for election to the Special District Risk Management Authority. You have to have your things in by July 8th. Hope you all got a chance to read through this CSDA news about SB 393 and AB 12, 1234. That was pretty good. And CSDA is doing an administrative survey, an administrative salary survey. So they'll be contacting people like Mr. LeBrun and getting data on what he gets paid versus other districts, and they'll probably come up with some, here's the spread, like we do many times, on what does each CSDA charge for their services. So with that, closed session items. Mr. Seitz.
Let him end the record. Oh, no, we announced closed session.
Right, we have to announce, we have to go to public comment, and then we'll.
May I ask a question before
session.
We go in on something that was said?
Yes, please.
Openly. The CSDA meeting on Friday evening, I noticed the terms, and I hadn't really thought it all the way through. If the alternate is elected to the seat, that vacates the alternate.
Right.
This term is supposed to be January 1st, 2006.
So the alternate, the new alternate, would be seated till January 6th.
So the rest of this year, if there simply would not be an alternate.
No, there would be. We would appoint an alternate, and likely what I haven't thought this through, but we can appoint the alternate for any terms we want. So my guess is that we would appoint the alternate for the same year that Stan's
okay.
appointment would go.
Okay.
Yeah. We would just switch the alternate from
okay,
one 4 year to the next. Thank you, Mr. President, members of the board, members of the audience now remaining. We're at four items on our closed session agenda, three of them having to do with existing litigation, all pursuant to Government Code Section 546.9. One is the Santa Maria Groundwater Valley groundwater adjudication. The other one is Maria Vista versus NCSD. The other one, and this one, actually we had very little discussed, but I guess, Summa Station. This is Napomo Community Service District versus the county. And then anticipated litigation, significant exposure, one case, all pursuant to the same code sections.
And we're recording now.
Okay, we're adjourning out of closed session, back into open session.
Yes.
Mr. Seitz.
Mr. President, members of the board, and we did adjourn to closed session to discuss the four items on the agenda. All were involved litigation. The board took no formal action or any action that was reportable as a result of its meeting in closed session.
Okay. Thank you very much, Mr. Seitz. Meeting adjourned.
Thank you.